here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and with me, as always, the original CeeLo Green, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
JR, it is always a pleasure, my brother. Welcome, everyone.
I guess it should be a Crisco Green, maybe, not CeeLo Green.
There's a kid that I went to high school with who can never pronounce my name, so he used to call me Crisco. It's pretty funny. It is episode 80.
Yes, and I figured I'd use that open, because I think... The sentiment in that song is going to be very heavy throughout tonight's show.
Yes, precisely. I figured now, since we're into wide receiver numbers, maybe we can kind of... So tonight is the Alvin Harper, Wayne Krabet edition.
Very good.
Of the Place to Be podcast. Figure one of mine, one of yours. It is, of course, the...
Headlines edition
of the Place to Be podcast, which is, of course, the Fun and Games edition. And... I'm trying, sir. I apologize. I'm trying to turn down my microphone. I believe
I think you sound better. There you go.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, I just turned it down. That was my mic. Earlier, when we were doing pre-production, we were attempting to play around with some new equipment, some new software. Thank you. No Art O'Donnell tonight, unfortunately. So.
Oh, all right, good.
That sound better?
He's always going to be with us, don't you worry. Yeah, that does sound much better.
All right, good. Thank you. All right. It is, of course, tonight, the weekly midweek cavalcade of fun and games, the cornucopia of fun and games edition of the Place to Be podcast. We have a lot to go over, but I think you'll enjoy it, and we'll have a lot of fun things to talk about, and of course,
yes,
we have one very seedy, ugly thing to talk about, and it could be the collapse. It is. I shouldn't say should be. It is the collapse of a college football empire, one that always thought they were better than everybody else, and now... Pretty much. Well, let's go over the rundown. We, of course, will open with our weekly Raw and SmackDown recaps, our quick ones. Of course, both were recorded. They were in Liverpool. They were in Beatles country this weekend. Of course, many people thought they were throwaways because, of course, the big shows are next week. One, your humble correspondents will be attending next week. So everyone thought these were throwaways, but there were some interesting moments. We'll talk about them on both Raw and SmackDown. We'll give you our Survivor Series update. Some matches have been added. I'm kind of digging the card a little bit. I'm curious to see your thoughts on it in PTB Nation. I'm kind of liking the way the card's starting to lay out a little bit.
See, I'm actually the opposite.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Interesting. All right. So we'll talk about that. Five. I think five matches have been official. Maybe six. No, I think it's five. One of our newest loyal PTB Nation members had a Cena question they wanted to throw at us. And I'm glad this person brought it up because I got some things to say about him too. So we'll get into that later. Of course, we will have our news and notes segment brought to you by our good friends at WrestleChat.net. Got some TNA stuff to talk about and some ratings issues and some other things as well. Of course, the much anticipated segment this week is the... PTB Nation interactive segment. That is, of course, the asshole of the week. And really, it's pretty much indisputable. And we will combo that with your my humble correspondence and my opinion of the seedy, disgusting, bottom-feeding drama going on in Happy Valley. Of course, we're talking about that nauseating news story involving the former defensive coordinator of the Penn State Nittany Lions and the ramifications that go throughout the entire university. This isn't just a football thing, folks.
No.
This ripples all the way to the top, and we'll get into that tonight. We will talk the other thing, and you know what? The NBA Players Union is lucky that this Penn State stuff going on because they might be the asshole of the weeks too. We'll get into that as well. And, of course, we'll wrap things up with our NFL Week 10 picks because even though my PIC had a better week than I did, we both have to pump our chests because we both called mm-hmm. things that came true. And we'll talk about that. So that'll be later on. So there is your rundown of the cornucopia of fun and games that is the headline show here on the Place to Be podcast. Number 80. All right, why don't we dive right in? Let's talk about Well done, my friend. Well done.
Okay, good.
Excellent. Yes. We are playing the Fab Four because, as mentioned, Raw and SmackDown, pretty much the whole company, went across the pond.
It's funny. I'm usually in on this, and so are you, and we were like clueless last week. We're like, oh, are they taping over? I had no idea that the show was going to be in England this week.
I had no idea either until I put Raw on and realized it was a big flag. They always pull out the same props.
Yes.
They pull out the telephone box. And that stupid car. They pull that out every English show they ever do.
Yeah, they better leave it stored over there in some friggin' warehouse.
I know, exactly. But,
yeah, but I think I was so fixated on the Boston Raw that I completely forgot about that this was, or I just never even paid attention that this would be in London. So, but it was good. I mean, I thought the crowd was pretty good. It was definitely better than that Mexico disaster.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, they definitely tweaked things a little bit and, you know, it definitely looked like they were in England. That's one thing about being in England. They always seem to do that right.
Oh.
Other than that,
look
Mexico.
Look at all the ugly
thing,
fans and their crazy teeth, so that helped too.
So we will give you the. What? I didn't know what you just said there.
I probably shouldn't say that again. I'll probably offend half of our fan base.
Oh, well, I know.
I'm making fun of the unkempt British masses. I'll put it that way.
What, our man.
They make
out there, Holland. He's Scottish. He doesn't care.
They make Matt Rotella look like Brad Pitt. I'll put it that way.
Oh God! would they just get out of bed? Jesus Christ! All right. Anyway. All right. So why don't we talk about Raw, and then we'll get into SmackDown, which of course will air on Friday. And then of course next week, of course, is the big shows. You, my friend, will be with our very good friend, my friendly rival, Rob Houston, on Monday night at the TD Garden for the 3-hour Raw Gets Rocked. You getting ready?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get rocked.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that after this week because I got a couple things I want to talk about.
Yeah, and of course, the next night, speaking of Mr. Liverpool himself there, Matt Rotella and I, will be at SmackDown the next night at the arena at Harbour Yard.
I think his new nickname might have to be the Liverpool Loverboy.
Liverpool Loverboy, the double L squared. Very good.
L squared.
All right. So why don't we dive in and get into the Raw? Again, we're not going to go through the whole show. I think a lot of people like this kind of nipping
it
in the butt.
I liked it, over. So that's all that matters.
I didn't think it was that bad.
I liked the new format, so that's all that matters. It's not the show itself.
Okay, I thought you said you liked the show.
The show itself was kind of... Yeah.
It was taped.
Yeah, it was very, you can tell there, I mean, this is one of the, like we said, this is one of the problems with them having so much time between pay-per-views, that they definitely seem in a holding pattern right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. They have so much they want to do, but they're afraid they don't want to blow it too early, so they're going to, you know, kind of half and half it. So, and that's pretty much what they're doing. The one thing I did like was the promo by Kevin Nash. I did dig that promo.
You didn't think it was too inside or anything? I saw that was a complaint from some people out there.
No, I mean, I like how he's got to get his digs in. What, that he said, oh, I thought he was a tool and I did it for Sean? Nah, I don't think so.
No, the stuff about, like, how he should have buried him back in 95 and was part of the clique and Sean said give him a chance and all that stuff.
Nah. What's inside anymore at this point? You know what I mean? Yeah. We all know it.
Well, I think it was just probably over the heads of a lot of fans. But, I mean, overall, I don't think it was that bad. He didn't go on and on about it. It was just explaining the history. I mean, I'm fine with it. I was just curious because that was something I had seen out there.
Yeah. No, in fact, I thought the promo was the highlight of the show, to be honest with you. Mm. I liked it a lot. Nash could still, when he gets time to get his thoughts back, he's not as good at flying off the cuff anymore as he used to. Because there's people out there that are better at it now. This isn't 1997, where we can all just talk like assholes and everybody gets away with it. That doesn't fly anymore. You got to at least have some semblance of what the hell's going on. And Nash was just a little out of his element. But I think now he's back. He's kind of settled in. I think he's fine. I think he'll be fine. I think it'd be a lot of fun to see him on camera. We all kind of cackle at it, but the Cena promo at the beginning, I don't know why they have him opening shows anymore. His promos now are just so dull. And he just sounds so, you know, a lot of things have been going on here in WWE.
Oh, I know.
You know, I don't understand what's going on here. You know, everybody's so excited. I mean, it's just, it's turning into too much of a bullet point promo. There's no flow to his promos anymore. I'm like, John, what's the matter?
Yeah, he is.
You're not getting any sleep?
We're going to talk about this in more detail. Like you said, our buddy Matt Marzella brought up a good point about it, and I agree with it, but the basis of it. But his promos really, I don't know what kids really could help him at this point. He's just gone. I don't know.
It's like he's checked out. I don't know. But yeah, we'll get more into that in a few minutes. But that was one thing. The matches weren't bad. I actually enjoyed a lot of the singles matches. I enjoyed watching.
Well, can you tell me why they make their champions lose, though? I know you're going to say Ziggler. I mean, it was cool to see Morrison get a win finally, but it seems like whenever guys win titles, then they end up start jobbing. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know what it is? You know what it is, JR? I think a lot of it. This is the problem I still have with creative. I feel like they still use the same book, like instruction manual on how to run TV matches. I feel like, look at before Vengeance. He kept losing. We'll use Dolph Ziggler as an example. Because Cody Rhodes isn't losing. Except to Randy Orton. But
it's just like four matches to Orton.
But all of them are 4.5 stars.
No, I know. But still, though, I mean, if you keep... That I can let slide on because Orton is booked to be a major player. And it's fine. Orton's the top... I mean, Rhodes is the top, you know, mid-card guy, and Orton's a main eventer. But stuff like this, where, you know, they basically actively said Dolph Ziggler has, like, a losing streak. I mean, come on. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
To me, your champion should really not lose like that. If you want to have him get a cheap win and he steals one from Morrison, or Morrison pins him in a tag match, I guess I'm okay, but... And it's fine every now and then, but it means less. Like, if you want to say, oh, yeah, well, you can use it to build a title shot for Morrison, that's fine, but if they hadn't already done it over and over and have the champions constantly lose, it loses its luster, you know?
Right. Again, what I think the problem is, they seem to have this whole free TV, pay TV match equation situation. I know maybe I'm overanalyzing it, but hear me out. It always seems like when they're prepping, you know how we always do the whole thing, oh, he looks strong going into the pay-per-view, which means he's going to lose. I think that same philosophy applies when it comes to these mid-card champions. Let's let Dolph Ziggler keep losing on Raw to make everyone think he's going to lose at the pay-per-view, and then he'll win at the pay-per-view. Guys, this is 2011. This isn't friggin' 1988. We're not idiots. Just book it any way you want, but stop trying to quote, fool us. Now, I know everyone's thinking I'm a hypocrite because we went through the whole kayfabe thing. That's not the point here. Kayfabe is one thing, but to have Dolph Ziggler keep losing matches just so we can get a false sense of security that maybe Zack Ryder will win, and then he doesn't? No, don't do that. We're not stupid. If you're going to make Dolph Ziggler strong and have him win to the pay-per-view, then just have him win strong and then win to the pay-per-view. All right, keep the character strong. Don't keep doing all this losing free matches because there's a chance he might lose the title, and then he comes to the pay-per-view and he wins. Don't do that. No one falls for that crap anymore. Just make your champion strong. That doesn't mean you have to keep having everybody else lose, but make it even. You know, just make it even. Throw caution to the wind and kind of go bouncing back and forth. And then focus on booking the pay-per-view. Don't worry about sweating out the we're not TNA. Don't worry about sweating out the TV shows. Worry about the pay-per-view. This isn't TNA where they could care less about it. You and I went through that whole thing a few weeks ago. They still need to make their money on the pay-per-views. Now, come 2012, where you and I suddenly heard that they're going to ditch the secondary shows as free clash type things, that's we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But right now, a week from Sunday at Madison Square Garden, it's a big fucking show to these guys. They've been pimping. They've been putting almost as much elbow grease into booking this as they do a WrestleMania, for God's sakes. So Sometimes I still feel they dust off the Federation manual that like George Scott wrote in 1983.
Yeah, but and, they didn't job champions out like this back then. I'm not really – I don't see that comparison.
Well, my point is I feel like you're trying to give the faces – a you want to give the fans – you know, the baby faces a kind of a boost.
No, and then on the I honestly don't think that's what it is because I just think they don't give a fuck about champions and titles. And that week they wanted – they needed someone to lose to Morrison. They said, fuck it, let's throw Ziggler out there. Now, I don't think it has anything to do with – trying to build up contenders and build the chase because I really don't think they care about any of that.
No, I wish we didn't have that philosophy. It's kind of disheartening to think that the belts are nothing more than trinkets. I mean, I'm sure eventually we'll have our man Dr. G on and he'll go through his whole soliloquy about how there's too many belts. But I try not to say that. You're being a little bit more of a realist than me in this. I'm trying to actually take it more for a.
I wish that was a reason. That would be actually respect. Something meaning that they're putting thought into it. But yeah. It's not like Morrison is going to. The old method used to be where they would have a contender defeat a champion that was going to be losing to somebody else. So in this case, Morrison pins Ziggler.
Right.
And then Ziggler loses the title to Ryder, and that sets up Morrison as a contender. The other way they would do it is the person that was going to be winning the title would actually lose to another guy. So in this case, Morrison would beat Zack Ryder. Then Zack Ryder win the title, and that would give Morrison a reason to go for the title. But they usually don't have him beat the champion and then not be involved, just to get him a win. I mean, they could have put a million guys in the spot. I don't know why they had to put Dolph Ziggler. They could have put Swagger in the spot, you know?
Yeah,
And you can't say, oh, they want to keep Swagger strong because he'll lose next week to Santino or something. Well, I guess that was last week. So it's like,
I know.
It just doesn't make sense to me. They just don't care. I mean, it's just... This is one of the negatives of not having jobbers and enhancement talent in those kind of matches anymore, is that you've got to have someone wrestle these matches, and unfortunately, you know, you can't win every time because they need guys that have to lose. And you look at the perfect example of a guy that is actually pretty valuable is a guy like JTG this week. They used him. He's a name guy. They put Mason Ryan over him. Doesn't matter. JTG's not going anywhere anytime soon anyway. He's viewed as a name, so maybe he has a chance, but that's what they need. He's basically the modern-day... You know, in the Brooklyn Brawler role, something like that, or a Coco. You know, so a guy like that who had a name and could win, but generally was used to put guys over. So that's right. The kind of guy they need more on these shows nowadays. It's too much. It's too much 50-50 booking, and it's been like that for a long time, and that kills momentum of anyone. I mean, heck, even Alberto Del Rio. He's been booked like shit since he won, the title. He hasn't really looked that strong.
No, in fact...
I mean, he beat Kofi this week, but...
Right. I almost feel like sometimes they take that. What they do is they take the hot guy from the crowd and make sure he doesn't get cooled off. So it's at the expense of other people. And Punk is one of the hot baby faces right now. So they're happy just jobbing other guys around him so he doesn't lose his luster. That might be another philosophy that makes no sense. But in any event, it's interesting to see how they're going to book all these guys at Survivor Series. If they don't want any of them to lose on free TV, does this mean that?
P.S. Your cunt is in the sink.
Yeah, like you have any say, moron. And another thing, we're wondering how far this is going to go now. You know, we're coming up on. Obviously, you know who is showing up at your show next Monday.
Yep.
And
he actually already returned. He was on a bunch of house shows over the last couple of weeks.
Let me ask you this. How long at this point do you think that Marty here will last?
I think Foley will do his thing, and then I'm going to say into the new year, I think he sticks around. And then I think Foley makes a power play to take over, and they build something at some point. I don't think they'll have a match or anything, but apparently there's a rumor out there that, I don't think it's one of our notes or not, but I saw a story that Mick wants to fight The Miz at Mania now. That's his new project.
I don't know. I'd like to see him fight Taker. It's kind of in my head now. I think that would be a fun match. But I don't know. Miz has nothing to do right now, so who the hell knows? Anyway, we could go on all night about booking philosophies. But the fact of the matter is, yes, right now Dolph Ziggler looks like a punk, and both guys that have belts. Well, I mean, also look what else they've booked themselves into a corner because other than the tag champions, every single title is owned by a heel.
Mm-hmm.
So. They've almost booked themselves into a corner in that aspect anyway. You know, you can't have all the baby faces lose. This isn't, you know, the NWO. So they almost have booked themselves into a corner to begin with.
Well, plus, I don't think they expected Mark Henry to be this good. So I think that's probably run a wrench into things a little bit for them.
That's true, yeah. He's awesome, and he deserves it. He's earned it.
Yeah.
It's been a hell of a job.
Even him, he's really been the only champion they've had that booked that strongly. Because even, I mean, it's not really a title, but even Daniel Bryan winning Money in the Bank, and he's been booked like, you know, like a loser since. So,
pretty much.
Outside of Mark Henry, I don't know what champion's really been booked strongly. And now the tag champions aren't even going to be on TV for a month, apparently. Because they never lost the titles, and Bourne's now gone for 30 days. But
What's that all about? But why do they? How could they possibly have blown that? Just have somebody else win them. What is going on?
Maybe they don't want to take it off him. I don't know. Maybe they'll just have him come back and do that. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But
there's where I agree with your philosophy about them not even caring about the belts. Yeah, just let the tag titles just sit around for 30 days, and then maybe they'll come up with some imaginary tournament.
I'm really shocked they didn't put them on Truth and Miz for a Survivor Series. I thought for sure they'd put them in that feud.
Yeah, be perfect opportunity.
I'm not saying that's a good idea. I'm just saying I'm surprised they didn't.
Well, I'll tell you why they didn't. If they don't plan on having Rock and Cena win, which you know they are.
Yeah.
But do you want them holding the belts, or do you just make it a non-title?
It doesn't matter. Yeah, maybe have them win, and then whatever, they forfeit. I don't know. Yeah, there's a million things they could do. But even if it was non-title, just to say Miz and Truth were the tag champions. But I'm just surprised. It seems like something they would normally do. But the rest of the show, Raw, very antiseptic. You know, the crowd was fine. The Nash thing was good, like you said. The main event was just kind of there, just a standard match. It was good to see Ryder get that kind of role with Cena. You know, Cena's really worked hard to give Ryder the rub on a major level, so he's really busted his ass. And Ryder's a guy who deserves it. He worked really hard this year to get himself over, and he's paying off. And he, to me, is a flag for these guys that complain and bitch about never getting chances or anything like that. Look, this guy did it. You can do it. And they're following through with him. They're pushing him. So, but outside of that, there really wasn't much else, honestly, to get excited about on this Raw. And I do want to talk about the difference between Raw and SmackDown. So are you good with Raw? Is there anything else you want to talk about specifically for last night?
No, it seemed like everything was fine. I mean, the main event match was, the tag match was, you know, it was all right. It wasn't anything really great. I, of course, continue to enjoy my man there, Bowser, because technically Brodus Clay did indeed debut, but they didn't have enough time, so they cut it off. So you're actually going to get his official debut on Monday night. And apparently he's going to be – well, we'll get more into him later, but they have high things for him. So I'm liking that because I think he's a good on-air guy that could really make a difference. So other than that, Raw was all right, typical taped – European show. Nothing offensive, but I mean, you know, if you missed it, don't kill yourself. It's not that big a deal.
Right. And now going into next week in Boston, they go home for Survivor Series, of course, the big 3-hour show. You got Mick Foley returning. Mm-hmm. We get The Rock. Rock will be there in the house. And also, we're finally going to get the Jim Ross and Michael Cole challenge. That's also going to be on that show. So,
yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to have a good week. And we'll, when we have our fun and game show next Wednesday, obviously. Or Thursday morning, depending what time you're up. We'll, of course, go over our live notes. I think I'm going to buy a t-shirt. Not sure what. I might buy the punk one. I told Liverpool Loverboy there he's got to buy the ice cream bar t-shirt. He's going to be walking around with a stupid ice cream bar t-shirt. Fit him perfectly.
I might wear the shirt I have with his face on it to Raw.
Oh, crap. I didn't think of that. I think I might wear mine, too. I think it'll be great. All right. So we'll talk more about that next week. Anyway, why don't we get into... SmackDown.
Right, yeah, let's do the SmackDown rundown for this week, and then I want to talk about the difference between the two shows. But Randy Orton comes out, talks about a Survivor Series team that he's leading, which we'll get to in a minute. Wade Barrett comes out, they go back and forth, then Christian and Sheamus both come out, and they all argue. We get our opener of Sheamus versus Christian. Once again, Sheamus defeats him with the Celtic Cross. Apparently, it's another very good match. Backstage, Daniel Bryan was telling AJ and Caitlin that he almost cashed in his briefcase last week. Mark Henry shows up and says, "How dare you almost cash it in?" And then, "You may have guts, but we'll spill them later in the evening." Ted DiBiase continues his renaissance, defeated Jinder Mahal, who's quickly sliding into the... Do you think he's like the lowest ranked wrestler at this point?
Well, the problem there is he was kind of pigeonholed into one storyline. Obviously, he was going to be involved with something involving Great Khali. That ended, and what the hell is there left for him to do? He's not that good a wrestler. He's okay. He's nothing... You know, he's not earth-shatteringly great, but, you know, once that ended, I thought it would last a little longer, but you know, I honestly didn't think that Great Khali would even be on TV anymore.
All right, we have two breaking stories here that I need to break in with.
Yeah.
First of all,
you want to break in, because I just called Dr. G just something just came into my ears there. Something off ESPN, of course. Yes, Dr. G just texted me, and I figured you wanted to break in on it as well, so we could do it together. So we were going to talk about the Penn State thing later, but we have to get into this now because kudos to the Board of Trustees at
Penn State
University.
It kind of sucks. I wish we taped the show like an hour ago because I had so much vitriol, and now it's not going to be as – I mean, it's still a lot, but it's not going to be as great.
Right. So a legend is done, and this is just a sad, sad state of affairs. Joe Paterno, who was going to retire, whether he wanted to or not, at the end of the season, is done. He was actually officially fired today.
They had to do it.
Yeah, they had to.
And the president
also
of
out
State.
Is yeah. Yes, Graham Spanier also out. This Board of Trustees is I applaud them for it. This is no bullshit here. This is no joke.
Apparently, the Mike McQuarrie is staying, which is shocking to me.
Yes, McQuarrie is. Well, we'll tell you who he is a little bit later on, because he's just as stupid as the rest of them. We'll explain why in a little bit. But anyway, yes, the news is official. Joe Paterno is done at Penn State. This is a guy who owned this campus and made one bad mistake. And now he's done.
It wasn't just a mistake. It was gross negligence. But another major story here going on is the Nationals catcher Wilson Ramos was apparently just kidnapped in Venezuela.
Yes, I just saw that too. Oh my God.
Sad, worrisome,
this is weirder.
And true that he has been kidnapped.
What the hell? This is worse than that whole weird Ugi Urbina story with his kids being put in a trunk somewhere, or his wife being kidnapped, or some weird thing.
Ramos
this
was
is
abducted
weirder.
By gunmen who entered his house in Santa Ynez, located 93 miles west of Venezuela's capital. So that's all there is out there on that. So some big stories breaking here, but we'll get more into the.
This is crazy.
We'll get more into the Penn State shit in a little bit. So, all right, let's finish up SmackDown really quick. Big Show. I'm sorry. So DiBiase won. Mark Henry beat Daniel Bryan once again. Hit the World's Strongest Slam. Bryan got a chair and went to hit Henry with it. Henry no-sold it, gave him the Strongest Slam again several times. He was about to break Daniel's leg, but Big Show came out and made the save. So, and then Show knocked Henry out of the ring. Henry kept Show out of the ring, hit Bryan in the back of the chair, and Show and Henry had a stare-off. Show then defeated three jobbers to build him up for Survivor Series. Alicia Fox beat Tamina. Hunico and Epico, who of course is Hunico's new running buddy, defeated the Uso brothers, and they got on and did a little Spanish promo after. And then Wade Barrett defeated Randy Orton. Orton went for the RKO, Barrett avoided it, and won with a thumb to the eye and a roll-up. So, good little job there, putting Barrett over in his home country.
Yeah, and clearly, they're starting to get him on the verge of some bigger and better things.
Yeah, he's definitely being
he's had kind
up.
Of a quiet year. Yeah, he's had a kind of a quiet year, and it's time for him now to kind of step up and take
He's almost mirroring Sheamus the year before. Sheamus had a great close to 2009, Yeah, 2009. And then 2010, he was pretty cold throughout the year, right? And then they built him back up as 2011 dawned. So it seems like maybe they're doing the same template as Barrett. Hot last year, cold throughout the year, and then they heat him back up going into next year. So, but I did want to talk about a story I heard, I believe Dave Meltzer was talking about it. Apparently the reason SmackDown has been doing so well and has been so great compared to Raw is that Vince, with his advanced age, is wiped out after Raw, apparently, and he pays like no attention to SmackDown. So they're left to just do their own thing, and Ed Koski and Michael Hayes are running SmackDown. And apparently they're two very good bookers because they're doing a hell of a job. And
absolutely.
Apparently Vince just doesn't really pay much attention to it because he doesn't have the energy to do both shows anymore. So it shows that he's winding down a little bit. Physically and mentally, and it shows that maybe it'll be a good thing for the product when eventually he is phased out. So, I don't know. But, I mean, SmackDown, obviously, and as we'll see in the ratings a little bit, has been doing quite well.
Yeah, and Michael Hayes has always been a good booker. Hey, you know what? This isn't anybody's fault but your own. Isn't it funny, though, that a couple years ago, Michael Hayes got in trouble for racial comments against Mark Henry.
I know.
And now he's booking Mark Henry, the greatest thing since sliced bread, as a monster. There you go, Mark Henry. He apologizes. He made you world champion, so
and
he can stop whining.
Matt Rotella calling him the silverback.
Calling him the silverback. the double L. I love that. That's a good nickname. Glad we gave him that. All right. But yeah, I mean.
He's got a puke.
I didn't know he gave you that. I didn't know
he's
you had that.
He's got a puke.
Do we have every clip from Beyond the Mat?
Oh, man.
Sick cackle. Anyway, I'm not surprised. Vince hardly ever paid attention to SmackDown. It's amazing that he actually was on SmackDown for most of 2003, and that was maybe the best year it ever had.
Yeah. Well,
and he was on it.
They also had a different group of talent.
Well, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I think once Vince eases up on Raw, then maybe Raw will start to be a little bit better too. Maybe Cena should go back to SmackDown.
No,
you know, I think that might be a good idea.
No. I don't want SmackDown to ever change again. It is, if it could stay in this
don't
level, if it could stay in this level of perfection forever, I'd be very happy with Mark Henry as a dominant champion. And maybe you cycle a face here and there to mix up the main event scene. And, you know, his Big Show is obviously not going to be the top contender for long. So, but it's just really just a very good show right now. And I like how they're going to have this whole, you know, Mexican feud going on with Epico and Junico against Sin Cara. And of course, looks like they're going to be bringing in a partner for him as well, which is cool. So you got, you know, Daniel Bryan putting around. You got the renewed push away Barrett. You got Cody Rhodes doing his thing. So a lot of good stuff to like on SmackDown right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Raw is just having creative issues because everybody's promos have just been terrible. The writing's just really not been very good.
They just seem to be in a constant holding pattern to me.
Mm.
SmackDown actually has like stories and advancements and week-to-week stuff, and Raw just seems like a repeat every week.
It seems like, you know what it is? To me, it seems like SmackDown's actually doing episodic television.
Yes.
Where Raw has its pay-per-view set, and now they're just killing time till it happens.
And it's not even that. That's it's just, Raw just seems like they're there to pop that week's show instead of actually building to things in advance. SmackDown's just very old-school build, and it's not a surprise that, you know, Michael Hayes is heavily involved, and Ed Koski, who he's been there forever, and he was, you know, worked with Lagana and a couple other guys, and he's been there, I think, since like 2002, Koski, so right. He knows what he's doing, too. So those are two very good minds for, obviously, and we're seeing it played out week after week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it was a good move for them to bring Orton over there because he's really kicked into gear starting with that Christian feud, even with the Punk feud, but mainly with the Christian feud. And he's shown he's not afraid to lay down for guys and put guys over. You know, he's really working hard to get Cody over. And now this past week, we see he laid down for Wade Barrett. And it's good to see that they have a top guy that can be invincible, but also can lose.
Right. Exactly. So so there's your SmackDown. I hope everyone enjoys it. It'll be on, of course, Friday night on Sci-Fi, and then next week we have our big shows on Monday and Tuesday, and of course we'll give you those updates next Wednesday live notes. Definitely let me know what you think of the merchandise stands. What do you think the you and friendly rival Rob Houston? Tell me what you think the hot stuff is that they're loading the merchandise stands up with.
I'm sure it'll be the new whatever Cena shirt du jour.
Yeah,
I'm guessing
yeah,
the Punk stuff going into Survivor Series. So I'm sure they'll have some Rock stuff there, without a doubt.
Have you noticed that they haven't done an Alberto Del Rio shirt? No, weird.
Yeah, I can believe it. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to wear it. So
yeah,
that's usually
I guess
what they
you're
do.
Right.
A guy usually wears a shirt, and I don't know. I think he's just a true heel, so doesn't really have the appeal that, you know, outside of Ricardo Rodriguez and his music, doesn't have the appeal that people would really want to go buy his shirts. But
yeah, you're probably right.
All right, let's talk about the Survivor Series card. Here's the updated card as of right now. Main event, obviously, John Cena and The Rock versus The Miz and R-Truth. U.S. title match, Dolph Ziggler defending against Zack Ryder. That's not official. Mm-hmm. Alberto Del Rio defends against CM Punk. Mark Henry defends against Big Show. And then we have our Survivor Series classic 5-on-5 match. Randy Orton, Sheamus, your Fabio, Matt Mason Ryan, Kofi Kingston and Sin Cara versus Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Christian, Jack Swagger, and Junico. Now, we pretty much have been talking that we hope they would do a team with Barrett, Cody, Christian, and Swagger. So I'm glad they're doing that.
Yep.
Oh, wait, don't mean Dolph would be in there too, but obviously he's got other stuff going on. I like that they're involving the Hunico and Sin Cara feud in here as well. That's pretty cool. I was hoping to see Daniel Bryan in this match, honestly, but I'm hoping maybe they'll do one more Survivor match and have him in it, and I'm guessing we're going to get a women's match as well somewhere. So
yeah.
I like the 5-on-5. The card, when I look at it, is not bad, but when I think about what it was supposed to be, like 2 months ago when everyone was talking about having that big 10-man with Triple H and Undertaker and Foley and Rock and Cena, and that Cena-Rock Miz Truth match just seems so flat to me. I feel like they've really botched the build to the show. And now it's to the point where we actually decided, remember I told you it was either last week or the week before that we were going to order it. We're not going to now. We're just going to Picasso's, and Jim's like, yeah, I don't really care. So in a three-week span, huh? We've gone from like wanting to pay to see the show to like, well, part of that is also that the Giants are playing Sunday night, so our man Andy wanted to be able to see both. But
oh, yeah, they're playing the Packers, I think, right?
No.
Is that the Packers?
Eagles.
No, they're playing the Eagles. That's right. And then next Monday, the following Monday night, they're playing the Saints. But we'll get to that later. Yeah. Yeah, you know, this whole... Here's the... We're starting... You know what it is, JR? We're starting to finally run into the problem. You know, they kind of avoided it for about 6 months, but now you're finally running into the problem of booking Rock Cena a year in advance. Because now they're petrified of blowing of dulling the luster on that match, that you're screwing all this stuff up. Because you know the reason why they didn't want to have this the 10-man is because they didn't want Rock and Cena hidden in the match. What the fuck does that even mean?
Well, no, I kind of get that. I mean, I kind of get it. It's just that this match...
Now, see, I don't get it. Well, who gives a shit? It's 6 months away.
No, but it has nothing to do with WrestleMania. We're talking about The Rock's return to the ring. They don't want him being overshadowed by Taker and Triple H. Like, they want it to mean something. Like, you're paying to see The Rock. He should carry the show alone. I get it. The match just doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. I think they figured that it's going to draw based on The Rock wrestling no matter what. The problem is Miz and Truth, they haven't done enough to establish that they're really this big, nasty, heel, juggernaut team. That's my main problem. And Rock all of a sudden wants to team up with Cena because he hates them, even though he helped Miz beat Cena at WrestleMania. It doesn't make sense. They haven't even done anything to The Rock. Now all of a sudden he hates them. And the fact that they announced that they'd be teaming up and now they made it like it was a big surprise last week, the whole thing has just been so fucked. And I don't get why Cena had to want Rock to be his partner. Why couldn't we just have Funkhauser make them be a team? Like, would that have been that freaking hard to do? And then you have a reason that they're tagging up. This is so stupid the way they've done it. It's been so ass backwards.
It is ass backwards. There's been no logic to any of the execution of any of the creative decisions. And I don't know whether or not hiding Rock and Cena, which I don't know. I just don't get that.
I think, honestly, they should have done a singles match with Rock. And
how about Rock, Rock and Miz? Oh.
Yeah, exactly. And then you know? Deem it as like Rock's comeback match, but also his, he can say, you know, I want to beat the Miz. This is my start to get back in ring shape to kick your ass. And then the draw is Rock's first match in however long it's been. So I don't know. I get the idea of forcing them to tag up. It's just the way they went about it. It's just really stupid. And the fact that they don't really have a strong enough heel for them to fight also makes it tough. That's why that's why I think if they did the whole thing with the 10-man, that could have given it some cachet. But I understand. I get their theory. I'm fine with it. I understand their thinking. I'm okay with that. I just this match just doesn't do it for me. It's so predictable and obvious what's going to happen that it's just like whatever.
The other thing that annoys me is let's be honest, the second biggest next to, well, you're supposed to be booking Punk and Del Rio as the hottest Raw feud because it is for the title. But the other big feud that's being pumped constantly every week on Raw can't even happen at the Survivor Series. And that's Nash and Triple H. Where's Kevin Nash on this show? He had a 15-minute promo on Monday night. Triple
I'm okay
H has
with that
to fill this
too.
Beatdown.
I think they feel like, I mean, they could have really loaded this card with that match, but I think they feel like they may need that to draw for TLC because you have Rock already drawing his Survivor Series. You really need to blow that match on the undercard. That's another thing I'm kind of okay with. I think they can have that be like a main match at TLC. I'm okay when they draw things out. I'm okay with that. I mean, it would have been cool to have them load this card up with mega matches, but I don't know. I think it's fine to let it simmer, let Triple H sit on the sidelines. Maybe Nash does show up at the pay-per-view and cut into the promo, or maybe attack someone. I don't know.
Maybe get into the curtain call.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff they could do. I think I'm fine with them slow burning that. Now watch, I said that, and this Monday Triple H will return and they'll hotshot the match for 1 week, but
yeah, with no build, and he'll look fine. And it was like when he got flipped on the car by Triple H by Austin, and then 2 weeks later came back with like a Band-Aid.
Yes,
but, you know.
Do you think? I guess we'll get into this when we do our preview in a couple weeks. But do you think this is finally when Zach wins the big one?
I said it to I was talking about it with the Liverpool lover boy today, because you know he's popping a chubby over this match. I said, you know what? They're at the Garden. I mean, if they were Nassau, then a monkey could figure out that they would pull it off. I think they do it.
I think they do it.
I think either Swagger or Vicky screw something up, and excuse me, and Zach. So who gives a shit? He holds it for a month, and then Ziggler can win it.
Well, then DLC. The next night on Raw and Hershey is when Mick is going to make his second appearance, because, of course, we know he's not going to be a Survivor Series. So maybe he does a little Long Island celebration with Zach or something. So I think so, too. We'll see where they go with the Punk thing. Obviously, the big story is that there's that Raw in Chicago on the 28th or 29th, whatever that Monday is. And
yeah.
Apparently, they're already penciled in for TLC. So it'll be curious to see. I could see them doing a screw job where Punk wins by DQ or count out here. Then he wins the title of TLC and then goes in as champion to Chicago. I still think they should have him win it in Chicago. I think he should get screwed here, get screwed again at TLC, and then he gets one more match from Funkhauser in his hometown, and he wins the title there.
Almost like they did at the end of 2003 when they gave Triple H, they gave Shawn the match with Triple H on that last Raw in San Antonio, and then Bischoff stuck him in the keister at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, although. Yeah. So we'll see. I it's weird. This, I'm sure a lot of people are probably confused, because it's almost like Justin and I are. We're not really slamming the card. We're not really praising it. I don't know what we're doing. It's like I don't know what to say. I mean, the slow burns are fine. I don't know. Rock coming back at the Garden is special. Yes, it's 15th anniversary of his debut. We get that. But I feel like they're leaning on that and then throwing all the logic out the window for the rest of it. I don't know. Maybe people are going to watch the show. I'm definitely going to watch it. I'll probably go to our friend Mike's and watch it. I'm sure he's going to get it. So, I don't know. We'll get more into it on next week. I'm sure, again, as JR and I go to the live shows, we'll let you know. We'll let you know how things are, and I'll let you know how our concession stands look. I shouldn't say concessions, merchandise, because the food at the arena at Bridgeport sucks. So hopefully the merchandise stands are pretty cool.
All right, let's read the Matt Morris comment here. We'll get into that before we move on to the news.
Yes.
So on the Facebook page yesterday, put up an interesting comment here, wanted us to talk about it. Thought I'd bring this up as a topic for discussion. I was watching Raw and heard the Cena sucks chant. I used to be a big Cena hater. But lately, I feel like I have to respect the guy. Maybe not totally be in his corner, but I don't think he sucks anymore. This guy's a hell of a worker. He hardly ever misses a show, even when he's off shooting movies. He's still on TV. He eats, breathes, and shits the business 24/7. He seems like a real stand-up, jam-up guy. He seems to have his rightful place in the business. I don't think there's anyone else that works as much as this guy. Apparently, John Gruden wrote this. maybe the character sucks, and I think a heel turn should come. But you can't deny that this guy is and has been the WWE longer than most have come and gone in the past. And this guy here, Matt Morris, left a promo here about this guy here, John Cena. So what do you think about that?
Of this guy?
Yes.
What do I think of this guy? I don't disagree with hardly. I don't disagree with much that Matt said.
To doubt El Dandy, because this guy's a serious professional.
Exactly. I'm sorry, Hitman. I'm sorry. I don't think anyone doubts that Cena is the hardest working guy. There's no doubt about it. The guy cares more. No one actually legitimately cares about wrestling. Maybe one guy, Triple H, legitimately cares about the actual business of wrestling.
Punk.
More than John Cena does. And Punk.
Yeah.
And the fans. My issue lately with Cena has nothing to do with heel or face or heel turns or the chick, you know, the little girls like him. I'm past that argument. We're done. There's nothing more to say about that. It's ingrained in the populace. It's the way the, quote, universe deals with him. And that's it. Let's move on from it. My issue with Cena right now is just, he's just flat all of a sudden. His promos haven't been very good. His matches have been okay. I haven't seen him wrestle a crappy match in a while. But the promos are just, you know, he's all about his personality, but just everything is so dull. You know, a lot of things are going on here in WWE. You know, The Rock and I are wrestling a Survivor Series. It's against, you know, it's against The Miz and R-Truth. I don't know, just everything seems so, I don't know, Stepford Wife-ish. Just so bland and flat. Just, there's nothing fun. And he's, you know, the his inside jokes are less funny than Triple H's inside jokes, which everybody hates. But I almost feel like he's trying too hard. I really think, and maybe I'm crazy, but I really think that he's getting butterflies about having to deal with The Rock for the next 5 months. Now, having said that, the last two or three promos we've seen of Rock's have not been great either. But that's just rust.
Right.
This isn't 2000 where he could just go off and... But, you know, you're also dealing with a guy who's not watching the product every day. We know he's not.
I know this is controversial to say, and people may think I'm just saying it to be contrarian. Was Rock really ever that great of a promo?
You bastard! No, I'm just kidding. Hey, I always thought, honestly, I always thought Steve was the... I'm sorry, Rob Houston. Stone Cold. I might be thinking I'm confused with, like, I don't know, Stevie Richards, who we love. And he cut good promos, too. Mm-hmm. He cut good promos, too.
Stone Cold. We're going to piss off the one guest that we have that could be...
No, Stevie, you're the best. We love you. We're going to have him back on in a little bit because some awesome video games have been coming out. So, no, Stevie will be back on. But Stone Cold was the preeminent promo cutter of the era.
Rock? I mean, yeah, was he just all catchphrase and rhyme? I mean, he was good. Yeah, very entertaining.
I almost feel like Rock was the you know, you made me, I'm not saying you bring up a great point because he wasn't a terrible promo cutter.
No, I didn't say terrible. I said, was he a great one?
I almost feel like Rock was the product. You know how we always say that, you know, to use a sports reference, like Matt Leinart was the product of a great system at USC, but as we've seen in the pros, he's a shitty quarterback. Was Rock the product of good straight men like Kevin Kelly, like Coach?
Oh, see, you were on a different track, I thought you were going a different track, which I agree with. Was he a product of the Attitude system?
Maybe.
See, because you know what? The one thing that kind of cancels this out was how awesome he was as a heel in 2003.
Yeah. Yeah. Rock never had... The only time Rock was ever... I don't want to say dull, but the only time that he wasn't the shining light was probably 2002.
Yeah, I agree.
He's very flat in 2002. And he came back and he won the belt again.
Sacramento, there I go.
Yes,
but I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings and Men.
That was that Rock. Whole first Rock concert might have been my favorite Rock work ever. When he's,
you know, when he's, you know, that'll always bring a smile to my face. So.
When Austin's in the truck, when Austin's in the truck, and he's like, "What are you doing? Selling bootleg shirts to The Rock?"
And he kept calling Hurricane Hamburglar. I mean, yeah, that he was awesome in that stretch. Yeah, and that was his best theme. With the whole helicopter over the big city and the is cooking bone.
All right, let me do this. I'm gonna name some guys that were big in that time period, and I want you to tell me if you thought that The Rock was better than them promo wise.
Okay.
All right. Triple H.
Yes.
So you think Rock is better than Triple H? This is what I'm at. So if you say yes, you mean Rock's better.
Yeah, I did. Look, okay. I love the game's matches, and I like his personality, but. Depending on the Rock was never inconsistent with his promos. Triple H, the promos were good depending on the feud.
Okay.
But Rock could always deliver a good promo regardless of who the guy was against when he came.
All right, ready? Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. At times, I think Rock's promos were better.
No way.
I think Shawn tried to be too much of a smartass sometimes.
I would listen to Shawn promos all day over The Rock.
Okay.
Mick Foley.
No. I love Foley's
promos. Mick Foley's the standard, pretty much, right? Him and Austin, they gotta be.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Bret Hart.
Ooh, push.
Okay. I'm talking like Attitude Era peak Bret, like 96, 97, when he was
I still think the Rocks are better.
Okay. Vince McMahon.
That's a strange one because Vince, I think Vince was good by accident with his promos. Genetic Jackhammer, nuts like, you know.
Yeah, but how's that different than the Rock's catchphrases?
Well, yeah.
I mean, Vince to me was like a promo god during those years.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I'll have to say that Vince was pretty good. Yeah.
All right, I thought that'd be an interesting little test. There's not too many other ones. I mean, he's better than the Undertaker. I'm trying to think of other big guys from that period.
Taker didn't need promos. Taker doesn't need to talk.
Yeah. Obviously, Flair is better than him. Interesting. If you guys take that up on the Facebook page, I'm curious to see your thoughts on The Rock's promo ability. But going back to Matty Mars here. Cena, I'm with Matt. I mean, I fully respect the guy. He's earned everything he's worked for. He's busted his ass. He's definitely a great face for the company, which is why they put him in this position and they don't ever take him out. Has he lasted too long, though? We talked about this on a previous podcast. I mean, think about it. He rose as a face in 2004. We'll say at 20 was like his turning point. So he's now going on, what, his eighth year? Or he'll be going into his ninth year at WrestleMania 28 as like the top, basically top level face in the promotion. Even if you want to say 21, or he's going in his eighth year. Mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan's reign as the main guy was what, 84 to 91, seven years?
Yep.
So he's now surpassed Hogan as being like the main face of this company. You know, yep. He obviously lapped Austin. He's lapped The Rock. Is he played out? Is he done? I mean, we just burnt because Hogan did it in a time where he wasn't constantly on TV all the time everywhere. You had to go see him live to see him.
Right.
Cena's on, you know, sometimes three times a week at times. So I think that plays a big part of it, is that he's just so played out.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big part of it is he's been doing the same character now since like 2005. He's been getting the same split cheers since 2006, and we're watching those 2006 pay-per-views now, and it's like the same thing. Like, you got half the crowd's cheering for him, half is booing him, and it just seems like things have changed. If you look at a show from 2006 and now, so much has changed, except for him. You know what I mean? He's like,
right.
He's the constant that's still doing the same thing. So I think that's just a major part of it, and I think people clamor for him to turn heel. I just don't know if it even makes a difference. I don't know if anything outside of like this guy being gone for like a year is going to help them, but they seem so afraid to have him lose or not be on a show. I think they're afraid like the whole thing's going to collapse without him, that it won't happen. So I don't know. If they're gonna turn heel, they need to have someone ready to be that top guy. I think they were hoping Orton could be that guy, but I don't think he is.
Is Punk that guy?
I think Punk could have been that guy, and I think they whiffed on the chance. And the problem is, like you said, that is a byproduct of them having booked Rock and Cena this far in advance. Maybe this summer would have been a great time to turn Cena heel against a face Punk and have Punk be the guy leading the show. But obviously they really couldn't do that because I think they want Cena to be a face going into that match.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it all depends on the only type of heel that Cena could be that could make it fresh is if he's kind of a almost too sugary, where, you know, he's almost so corporate that he's falling in with the wrong group. And the only guy that he could really do that well with is Vince, and that's not going to happen anymore. This, you know, Vince is just too old. And Marty, I don't think we can have Marty on TV that much longer before he just becomes into Mike Adamley range. So other than that, I don't know what's left to do. You don't want to make him you can't make him like like the Thuganomics heel anymore, because everybody will love the guy.
That time's gone. I don't think you can do that anymore. I really don't know what they do. I think his best bet might be the corporate sellout. That might be his only chance.
I want to, you know, I almost want to amend my answer earlier. When you asked me if Sean was a better promo cutter than Rock.
Shut up!
Hey, no one's talking to you. Take a nap. Did you mean pre-back injury Sean or post-back injury Sean? Because his promos, the catalog
I said, well,
of Sean
I qualified
promos,
it. I said
is very different.
I qualified it. I said Attitude Era guys. So Sean in his peak prowess, DX, 96, 97, that stuff.
All right, no, okay. Well, if you say that, then yeah, Sean's promos were much better. Sean's promos in the 2000s were very sugary. So, you know, Rock in the Attitude Era was better than Sean in that aspect. Match-wise, there's no comparison. But promos, yeah. If you're talking about Sean in 97 when he was just a complete D-bag, well, there is only one, then yeah, he definitely blows Rock away in that aspect. Rock wanted to make sure that everybody liked him while he was being a jackass. Sean could give two shits in 97 who liked him. You know, that was always the thing with Rock, was that, not to go off the subject with Cena, but, and it's almost the same thing with Cena in his promos. Rock wanted to make sure, even though he was being a smartass, you were liking him being a smartass. Cena now, almost, I think he's almost falling into the trap of wanting to be liked so much that he's not, that his promos are just so dull because you're not going to get upset with him. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, Matt, that was an outstanding question, because we can keep going, and maybe we'll get our cast of characters back on here to talk about that, because that's a great question to ask a lot of people. What does the future hold for him? They seem to be so hard to want to make him an actor, yet his movies are all just average. This one now that's coming out looks stupid. This Reunion. You've seen the trailers, right?
Yes. Yep, the brothers.
The Reunion. It looks dumb. It looks worse than The Marine. I don't think The Marine was that bad, to be honest with you. I don't even think, what was that stupid wrestling movie? The one where he plays the one with what's his name in it, Danny Glover, and what the hell was that called? Oh, I don't remember the name of it. Oh, you know, the one where he's like the
Legendary? Was that one?
Legendary, yeah. I caught bits and pieces of that on like YouTube and stuff. That doesn't even look that bad. This movie looks horrible. It certainly looks worse than The Chaperone. Maybe that's my Triple H bias. But this movie looks hideous. I don't know. But I don't know if they're trying to push him to be such a big actor and they realize that maybe the acting is not doing it and they can't just flush the guy down the toilet, so let's keep him a wrestler, and but they're running out of things, and I don't know. There's a lot more to this than we could do tonight. But but Matt Mars, thank you, my friend, for some insight on that, and maybe we'll come up with an answer at some point. But it's a lot to think about. And we're coming up on one of the most hyped WrestleManias in a long time. In a long time. And you know what? You also opened up another good debate, JR, that we can get into in the future. Who is the greatest promo cutter of all time? Is it Mick? Is it Steve? Sorry, Rob.
They're torn. I'm torn on that. I mean, they're both. If you take the whole body of work, like whole career, you're going to go Mick, I think. Because when you factor in his ECW stuff,
yeah,
he was tremendous.
Yeah, that's why I think I prefer to see if Taker was going to have one more match at 28 to go for 20-0. I think it's got to be against him.
Mm-hmm. All right, I do think we should move on though, because we got a bunch of news, and then I think we're going to need a lot of time for the asshole of the week stuff.
Yes, exactly. So, all right. So, thank you, Matt Mars. Great question. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll get more into this when we have more time. We'll bring the cast on, Loverboy there, and Reesh and all those guys. We're waxing nostalgic for our old cronies because we're listening to some of our older shows earlier in the week. We are getting to the spring though, and hoops will be upon us. We're going to need our all-star team back soon. So anyway, why don't we take a breather, because we got into a lot of deep stuff there. When we come back, of course, we'll have our news and notes. We'll also have Asshole of the Week and the Asshole of the World, as well as maybe some quick NBA notes, and then, of course, our NFL Week 10 picks. But take a deep breath, and we'll be back. Because
pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
You could have at least played the Armageddon song.
No,
come
we
on.
Needed your Maroon 5 cover of Britney Spears.
Moves like Jagger. that was fun. Oh, come on, Vince. You would have enjoyed that party. Oh, God. I actually, going through some of our older... You and I actually have been watching Nostalgic as we're heading toward the... As we're heading toward the C note of our Place to Be podcast. Listen to some of the older ones the last couple days. And we were talking about the Rotellapalooza. Anyway, WrestleChat.net is your home for everything pro wrestling. All your news and notes, WWE, TNA, some UFC. They have a great message board, of course, the champ and the announcer with their podcast. And don't forget our little friend, the PTB Gnome, on the right. Click on it, and you can go right to the Podbean page and listen to us. So you can read the news and notes, then click on the Gnome, and then you can hear our opinions of the news and notes. WrestleChat.net, your home for everything professional wrestling.
All right, let's hit these stories quick, and then we'll move on to the good stuff. Well,
yes.
Bad stuff. But
well, bad stuff. Good stuff for the media world.
All right. Here's our first story. Hall of Famer Blackjack Mulligan told Mike Mooneyham of the Post and Courier that it was actually his wife that found their son Barry Windham at the family's ranch in Florida last month. He said he just fell and he passed out. He was totally out of it. When we found him, he couldn't hear me. I asked him how many fingers I had. And he said he didn't know. He couldn't raise his right hand and couldn't move his fingers. He obviously fell, but we don't know why. Could have been all day when we found him. By then, the organs were failing and he didn't even recognize us. Mulligan also says that Wyndham's left knee was the size of a cantaloupe from the fall, and that his right foot had been turned at a 45-degree angle and spun inside his femur. Wyndham's left knee was dislocated, his right wrist was broken. This sounds like he lost a brawl for all to Bart Gunn when Dr. Death had all those injuries. This poor guy.
Jesus.
His right wrist was broken from the fall. He suffered elbow injuries as well as a big knot on his head. There was fear that Wyndham suffered a chipped or broken neck that was affecting his nerves in his arm and leg, but Wyndham did recover feeling in his fingers and toes. Wyndham did have a heart attack, and the heart procedure went well. Doctor says a minimal damage, and the heart had a Wyndham has a big, strong heart. Mulligan says that, I guess he wasn't a roid monster then. Mulligan says that his son is facing a long-term rehab and possible knee and leg surgery. He said it's going to be a long deal. It's a very close call. We almost lost him. But Mulligan did reveal that WWE is paying for Wyndham's rehab treatments as Triple H, Wyndham's longtime friend, approved all the funding. Mulligan said a big black Cadillac limo pulled up to the hospital, chauffeur got out, and two doctors put him in the back of an ambulance and whisked him off. He's at a place where they're taking care of all his problems and being ministered to physically and spiritually.
Again, I don't think it's any surprise at the benevolence of the McMahon family.
No, they definitely take care of their own, and yeah. You know, Triple H obviously is a good friend of Barry Windham, and he's hooking him up, and it's good to see Barry. I mean, that sounds like hell that he went. That sounds like a
what the
lot.
Hell did he fall off the fucking roof of his house? Jesus, my
yeah,
God.
That's a rough fall.
Good Lord. His foot spun in his leg? Ow. The hell? Wow. Well, BW is one of my favorites of all time, obviously. The most, next to Tully, probably the best in terms of work rate, and this is not a knock on Arn, but just pure work rate. Wyndham is probably two behind Tully as the greatest horseman wrestler of all time, not counting Flair. Flair is a separate class. I'm talking about the other horsemen. They all had their own ways of wrestling, but obviously Wyndham had a way about it, and he was big with the women. But I loved him as a heel with the black tights and the black glove, and I'm happy that he's being taken care of, and we wish him all the best here at PTB Nation. Wyndham was one of the good guys. The only bad thing he ever did, and, you know, he atoned for his sins when he was a jerk to Vince in the
young kid.
85, and he was a smart ass, and you know, I'm sure he's probably, when he was cutting those silly stalker promos in the woods, he's probably like, what the fuck did I do to deserve this? Well, yeah. I guess I was an ass. So, regardless, though, Barry Windham's had a great career. When you and I get back to when we do our alternating of written reviews, we go back to the NWA stuff. I'm sure, I think you'll really like when he was actual NWA champion and he was wrestling a lot of the Japanese guys. He wrestled Muda and a couple others. You'll be very impressed. He had a great run from like 87 to 93. I don't think there were many better in-ring performers than Barry Windham. So we wish him all the best, and we're glad that the game and the family's taking care of him. So good luck, Barry. We hope you'll be back soon. I know he's going to have a gig. I know that he may do some booking, and I know he was doing some producing and stuff. So
All right. Speaking of other guys helped out by Triple H and the WWE, Sean Waltman recently tweeted about whether he'll be returning to WWE TV anytime soon, saying that Vince isn't ready to put him back on TV due to his health issues. I'd love to one day return home. I still need more time doing well. Not long ago, I attempted suicide. I understand Vince's fear. You can thank the wellness policy for me even being here tweeting with you. They spent almost as much on me as they have on Scott. And not you.
Meaning
Scott Hall.
Hall, not me. Exactly. Yes, I think Sean has gone through their rehab, four times,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he's been through a lot.
Four or five times. But he seems like, with Triple H in charge now, for the most part, I think you'll see a lot of these guys kind of get back on track because they know that Triple H will take care of them. And
well, he was one of the guys that was supposed to be one of Triple H's point men in the developmental. Remember him, Undertaker, and Nash, they were saying would be like going to be the guys that helped him get that back on track.
Yeah. I have a feeling Nash, speaking of, and Taker for that matter, are going to be good good guys for Brodus Clay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a guy that's going to really need Hunter and or more Taker and Nash's input on how to be a real good
All right, well, hold that thought because we have a thing on him in a minute.
Yes. So anyway, yeah, I hope X-Pac comes back because, you know, he was always good in the ring. And I have a feeling he really is trying to get his life back on track. So another guy that we hope will do well and come back to the family.
Okay. And now not doing well is Raw's ratings. This last Super Show from England did a 2.9 with 4.015 million viewers, down from recent weeks. In comparison, Monday Night Football did a 12.32. Raw continued a trend this week of losing viewers in the second hour. Hour 1 did a 2.94, while Hour 2 did a 2.81. And now in comparison, remember last week we told you SmackDown took a little bit of a hit, but this week they're back up, getting a 2.19, up for the 1.93, which was up against Game 7 of the World Series, of course. After the one-off week, SmackDown resumed its hot streak that started in September, after the live SmackDown show on Tuesday, August 30th, around the time of Night of Champions. SmackDown's averaged 3.27 million viewers, which is the most average viewers since SmackDown following WrestleMania 27. So SmackDown's actually closing in on Raw. They're not too far behind rating-wise. And
I know. It's pretty sad. I mean, it's
well, it's scaring me that Vince is going to start meddling. I hope he doesn't. I hope he sees how well SmackDown's doing. I mean, that's to be drawing that number on Sci-Fi on a Friday night is pretty fucking crazy.
Mm. So, do you think Sci-Fi will ever think about doing live Tuesday nights?
I don't think it's
well, not Sci-Fi. It's not Sci-Fi's decision, yeah. But I mean,
I think maybe they should, but I think right now they shouldn't tamper with a good thing. I think it's going well. The numbers are pretty solid. If they can get away with the way they're doing it and not having to go live, and they can kind of, you know, post produce it, I think it's fine. I don't think being taped hurts it at all. Apparently, so if anything,
right.
it might build some buzz because, you know, a lot of people last week read how good that Orton Cody match, and a lot of people might tune in to see it. Same thing with all the Mark Henry stuff, you know. So I think maybe the buzz of the spoilers is helping it a little bit.
Yeah. Also, I don't think they're going to mess with any programming things until, you know, they realize what they plan on doing with the network.
Yeah,
for the
that's
most
true
part.
As well.
So they're not going to touch. I don't think they're going to touch anything until we get to network time. But yeah, I agree. I think they should just leave SmackDown alone and keep screwing up Raw. Because Raw finds a way to, because Raw does find a way to eventually get back on track.
Yeah.
SmackDown, if you damage it, it takes like 2 years for SmackDown to be good again.
Yeah. Well, let's enjoy it now before they strip mine it down again around draft time, I'm sure. So let's enjoy it from now till Mania. And I'm really starting to hope, and I'm becoming more hopeful by the week, that they're going to leave the title on Mark Henry until WrestleMania. I'm really hoping they do it.
I do too. I think it'd be tremendous. Why not? It's not your main storyline, so Don't be such dicks about it, you know?
Yeah.
You got Rock Cena. Let everything else kind of handle itself.
I really hope they build Henry and let Brian challenge him at Mania. I really think it's the way to go.
I think so, too.
Okay. Brodus Clay, who you mentioned a minute ago, his debut was cut from last week's Raw. Current plan will be re-debuting next week from Boston. And there's talk going around that Clay will be involved in a top storyline on Raw.
Good.
No, they've been building him like they want to deliver that, so.
Yeah, maybe he'll go back to being Del Rio's muscle again.
Hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. What they need to do right now is just do like they did, you know, with other guys and just kind of have them face some stiffs and just have them just maul guys.
Yeah.
And get the character burgeoning. And this is where you start using guys like, guys like Nash and, you know.
Well, I'm wondering if they'll have him go back to being aligned with Del Rio or maybe with Maybe he'll be Laurinaitis' backup or something like that.
Mm. That'd be interesting if he's Laurinaitis' backup. Yeah, I think he's a guy that really could use the help and really, you know, kind of drum up the support from the office, and maybe that's why they did keep Kevin Nash, to help these young big dudes and kind
of. No, I think they kept Nash because he's friends of Triple H. But.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Triple H is not going to keep him around. You know, this isn't like they did with fucking on Impact, where they're just going to hang around and make money and do nothing. I think Triple H is going to put him to good use, and I think that's one reason why. So I'm looking forward to it. I like seeing, you know, us, and we're both. Mm-hmm. We're both, you know, marks for big heel hosses. So, and here's another one. So, let's hope he can, you know, maybe he'll be, well, if he's on Raw, then he won't be Mark Henry's guy, but I don't know.
We'll see. All right. Interesting. WWE Hall of Famer Roddy Piper still lobbying on Twitter for WWE to hold a Piper's Pit with He, Rock, and Cena to promote WrestleMania 28. Here's one of Piper's many tweets on the subject. If the WWE doesn't put Rock, Cena, and Piper in Piper's Pit, they're cheating every fan in the universe. Think they're afraid? I'm not. We come from a position of power, tweets. Spam the WWE for Piper's Pit with Cena and Rock. I promise it will be epic. Well, you know, if it's as good as the one he did last year before Survivor Series, then hell yeah, I'd do it too.
Yeah, that was very good. And they should do it, if they're going to do it, they should do it the week before.
Yeah.
Or at least one of the last 2 weeks before WrestleMania. You don't want to waste it in January.
No, I agree.
If you're going to do it soon before the, you know, pretty soon.
Yeah, kind of a last hard sell like they did with Survivor Series.
Right.
All right, one last news story, and then we're going to move on. This is kind of an in-depth one regarding TNA. TNA Ohio Valley Wrestling relationship was announced yesterday. It was the brainchild of Bruce Pritchard, who's very familiar with OVW developmental system. When it was associated with WWE, he pitched the idea to TNA several months back. Pritchard's selling point to TNA said that the lion's share of WWE's stars broke through as top-tier talents came through OVW seasoning, which would be correct, although many of them were signed by WWE prior to be sent to Louisville. A visit was arranged with several execs, including Pritchard, Eric Bischoff, Jeff Jarrett, visiting the Davis Arena, so they could get a feel for the venue the way that Danny Davis operates. The new relationship will allow TNA to send potential talents they want to evaluate, as well as younger talents, to Louisville. They can gain seasoning in the ring from trainers like Rip Rogers and experience working weekly TV shows and house shows. Basically, everything will come from the existing OVW camp, as opposed to OVW expanding. At this time, there's no plan to sign a lot of independent talents, but the deal will make it easier for the company to develop them when they come across someone. The deal will also allow TNA the chance to monitor the regulars. Whatever. It's exactly the shit you would expect. So, So interesting. I think it's a good, you know, anytime you think TNA is going to die, they come across with this move that makes it seem like they're not planning on going anywhere. So, I think it's a smart move. We'll see if it pays off for them. I don't think it can hurt.
No, not at all. You know, they need some kind of proving ground for new guys. I mean, guys are going to have to be cultivated at some point. And, you know, OVW is a good place for it. You know, obviously, three-quarters of the roster right now in WWE, I don't know about three-quarters, but at least, you know, a good portion of the main event guys, Orton, well, your two huge main event guys, Orton and Cena, both came from OVW. You know, one was himself, Randy Orton, and obviously Cena was Prototype. Batista was Leviathan. I mean, you had a boatload of huge guys that have been stars over the last, you know, 10 years. Don't forget, Brock Lesnar was there tagging with Shelton Benjamin. They were that Minnesota wrestling connection or whatever.
Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, if TNA does it right and have the right guys running things, and I do trust Bruce Pritchard in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Then this might be a big moment. This might be a big move for TNA. They might be able to actually have some faith in their roster, and, you know, not worry about Hogan getting his hands all over that disaster. And maybe this is a step in the right direction for them to start trusting some younger guys and not worrying about Hogan's influence anymore. You know, we'll see. But I think it's a good move. I think it's a good move.
All right. That's it for news.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, that's all I got. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to them. I'm looking forward to them actually cultivating and having something to work with. So there's your news and notes. I'm not looking forward to this. I am and I'm not. It's just so, ugh.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll get through it.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of news stories that I've done in my life.
Yeah, they're actually having the news conference right now.
Oh, are they?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It says earlier. Never mind. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's
all right.
Set it up.
Well. It is time now for PTB Nation's weekly interactive segment.
What kind of disgusting, despicable?
He's an asshole.
Who the fuck is this asshole?
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes.
Do you know who I am?
That grade A, genuine, authentic asshole.
Yes, you're an A. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is now time for the place to be asshole of the week.
Of the week.
You deserve all the credit. You're an asshole tonight.
And there you go. We'd like to thank the wonderful Derek LaRue for putting that little piece together for us.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But the winner this week is...
Yeah, in the bag.
In the bag. Yeah, no one else needs to say anything. But why don't we... what we're going to do is we'll go down our list of our wonderful PTB Nation members and go over their picks.
Breaking, by the way. 22 comments.
22 comments. Because it's almost perfect. Some people said other things, but that's okay. Let's go down the list. We'll begin with Matt Davis, who said, "How Belichick hasn't won this every time confuses me." Well, you can't just be one. You need to legitimately. Yeah.
That week you had to have done something that makes you an asshole. Bill Belichick, everyone knows he's an asshole.
Being one and doing something are two different things.
We'll get into that idiot when we get to the picks. I got some stuff to say about them.
Yeah. I guess I deserve this one. The master of the apostrophe, J. Arsenio D'Amato. Art Donovan for having the nerve to still be alive despite Scott's eulogy. I apologize. I really did think you
had him in the grave, unfortunately.
I had him in the grave. Although if you look at him, he looks like he is. But he's probably what? He's like 90, 92, I think now, 90, 89, something like that. Although he does say, again, trying to bring some levity because the Sandusky Joe Pa thing is horrifying to talk about. Well, we're going to have to talk about it in a little bit. Jason Greenhouse, our art director. I have to go with Jerry Sandusky and Joe Pa, if found guilty, along with wanting them to both burn in hell, have my vote for asshole of the year. He might very well be if we do that. Todd Weber, everybody involved in this Penn State cluster F.
I enjoy Penn State. That's a good nickname, right?
Penn State, yeah. Matt Souza, Sandusky and Paterno, the whole situation is repulsive and disturbing, and shame on them if the accusations turn out to be true. Well, they hate to say it, they pretty much are. Rob Houston, Penn 1N State, and everyone that is involved with this scandal. Okay. Mike Wilkinson, he has a couple of comments. John Cena for proclaiming that Zack Ryder is a future Hall of Famer. The guy is over, don't get me wrong, but future Hall of Famer might be a little early for that one, John. Just because you're the Hulk Hogan of this generation doesn't mean you can call him a future Hall of Famer. This is like saying Cam Newton is a future Hall of Famer for the cup of coffee he has been in the NFL. He also adds, the only reason I didn't put Joe Pa and the other people is I just don't know for sure who was involved. I am reading reports that Paterno may not have known what was going on. Well, you're dead wrong on that. Mm-hmm. This is obviously a much more horrible offense, and Sandusky is obviously the asshole of the week. Okay. Corey Ferreira. Jerry Sandusky and Joe Pa, I just read about it after reading the Asshole of the Week posts. This is truly fucked up shit. You ain't kidding. Rob Houston again. Joe Pa should definitely be included in this for Asshole of the Week. It's not enough to just tell your boss about something like this. As an educator, coach, representative of this school, he, they, legally, are required to report something like this to the police or Child Protective Services. It's not enough to report it to your supervisor. Everyone at that school failed those children that were involved, and it should cost Joe Pa his job. The fact that he told the AD is the only thing keeping him out of jail right now. Brian Anderson, I'm going with the Penn State situation. I have to think Joe Pa had no clue what was going on, similar to how he coaches. Then you had a comment. We'll move on to that. Kieran Polland.
Ah, Scott.
Hey. Just read about what the big deal is about this Sandusky and Paterno thing. Holy shit, why is it the UK always has some form of normalcy in their country? Sandusky and Paterno are my nomination. Mike Wilkinson says Joe Pa looks like he did know. Yes. Rob Houston again. People involved in the Penn State scandal are the assholes of the week for life until they go to jail. Should be listed with every winner going forward. I'm sorry if this is coming across like a rant. However, given the work I do, which Justin knows, this is something that I'm extremely sensitive to. Jason Greenhouse comes
Rob
back.
Rob spells like Matt talks.
Rob, I totally know where you are coming from. The line of work I do ties in with the subject matter as well. Okay. Matt Mars, I agree with Penn State scandal. On a wrestling note, I nominate Raw for bumping JR again and Brodus Clay. I guess they're trying to pack in a lot in the three-hour show. Brian Samick, everyone involved with Penn State football right now. This is from a proud PSU alumni.
Yes.
Who worked for PSU football for a few years, 97 to 98, which is right in the wheelhouse of this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, Brian. I'm going to have him on. Until all those pieces of trash are gone, my allegiance is dead. Interesting. Kevin Bowers. Hands down, it goes to everyone involved in the Penn State scandal. How do you try to cover for a guy messing with kids that's messed up? Austin Pfaff. Diamond Devin Page for that call out in the Mania 10 vault. He's just upset he's the bastard son DDP never wanted Kimberly to know about. Jordan Duncan, first time voting. That is?
Yep.
True. JD. Jerry Sandusky gets the obvious vote, but a close second goes to McQuarrie. How do you walk in on a child being raped and then walk away?
Yeah, I think it's unanimous that the whole Penn State thing is obviously clearly the asshole of the week this week. And now, to kind of get into the whole thing, I don't think we need to go through all the details. I think everyone knows the story by now. I've seen people out there defending Paterno, saying, oh, well, you know, he went to his supervisor. What more do you want to do? He shouldn't go to jail. It's his freedom and all this other stuff. There is a law in Rhode Island. I don't know what the law is in Pennsylvania. That if you're aware of any sort of child abuse and you don't go to the police or DCYF, you're prosecuted as a felon. I think anyone who knew about this thing and didn't report it should be locked up. I honestly firmly believe that. They knew about this shit more than one time starting in 1998, and they continued to turn a blind eye to it. Sandusky was with children on campus after everything had already been known the first time. Mm-hmm. He was on campus in general as of recently as last week.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Paterno is like the czar of Penn State. You're telling me that he didn't know Sandusky was still hanging around with these kids? No way. He knows everything that's going on in that fucking campus. You can't have it both ways, Paterno. You can't say you know everything and you have full control and you're telling the AD 5 years ago that, no, I'm not leaving even though you want me to leave. And now all of a sudden you don't know? Give me a fucking break. You know what was going on. He knew the whole time. Mm. It's just that Sandusky was his boy. And the worst part is that they filed the complaint, and Sandusky was looked into for this shit back then in 1998. He was looked into for molestation charges, and they basically just told him, hey, stop showering with kids. Oh, nice work. Way to go. That was really really effective.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, stop taking showers with kids. I'm sure you don't have a problem. I'm sure you're going to stop cold turkey, obviously. And then, of course, they had the whole thing where one of the mothers who found out confronted him, and they recorded the conversation, and Sandusky mm-hmm. basically admitted it, and they still didn't mm-hmm. do anything. They still did nothing. It's a fucking joke.
Well, you heard the story about this DA who apparently knew about this conversation that Sandusky had with this mother, and then he vanished. His laptop was found in a lake. He's presumed dead. He vanished into the woods or something. He told his wife, I'm going antique shopping, and this was, what, like 10 years ago or something. And no one's ever seen the guy since. So I don't know what the hell's going on with that. But when I first heard this come out, I thought it only took place in the 2000s after he had retired. Sandusky was the defensive coordinator from 70. Let me just go through the tawdry stuff, just his chronology. Sandusky joined the Penn State staff in 1967, the year after Joe Pa became head coach. Paterno's been there since 1950 or 52.
Yep.
50. And became head coach in 66. Sandusky started in 67. As an assistant, I don't think it was a grad assistant or if it was something. He took over the linebackers in 72 and became the defensive coordinator in 77.
He was the heir apparent, and he thought he was going to get the job, but Paterno's basically like, no, I'm not going anywhere.
No, he said, and that's why he retired in 99, because Paterno told him in that spring, I ain't going anywhere, so if you want to retire or go for another job, go ahead. And instead, he retired. In 1994, he started this charity called the Second Mile, which was a charity to help foster kids, all boys, no girls.
Of course,
that should have been a fucking red light to be right there. And this goes, and this stuff starts, and pretty much immediately, when he started this charity in 1994, is when stuff started happening, and. We're talking little thing. Now, the one seedy thing is what everyone knows about, which is in 2002 when the guy McQuarrie walked in the shower and that was happening. I'm not saying what it is. We all know what it is. If you
now,
read the
how
thing,
do you how are you him and how do you A, not go in there and break it up, or B, not call the cops on the spot?
Like, I would have gone.
Hey, I'm right here, and this is going on. You need to get here. I mean, was he afraid that Penn State is a college, since that whole town is just the college, you know, they had all the police in their back pocket? Because it also seems like that the campus police were in on this, that they knew all along as well. So maybe he felt like no one was going to help, so that's why he went to his dad, and his dad corroborated this whole thing, that, you know, his son told Paterno exactly what happened.
Yeah. Now, the reason this has hit, somebody asked me earlier this week how this hit the national spotlight, if it's been if Sandusky's been investigated since the late 90s, because both Tim Curley, who was the AD, and I don't remember the Schwartz, right, or Schultz,
yeah,
the finance guy, lied under oath,
mm-hmm,
because McQuarrie told them what the specific act Sandusky was doing with this kid in the shower. It wasn't just, they said under oath, he said that just some things were going on, but he wasn't specific. But McQuarrie clearly said,
right,
Sandusky was doing this to, yeah, this kid. Excuse me. And then so they were committed. Excuse me. They were accused of perjury, and then that's when the shit hit the fan.
Well, plus there was also the story in 90. Was it 98 when the janitor saw it and he?
Yes. And the guy like freaked out.
Yeah, they thought he was gonna have a heart attack. He said he's witnessed.
Yeah.
He was in a war and he hadn't witnessed anything this disgusting and bad. And he told his supervisor, and that never went anywhere either. And that was in 1998. And now they're saying, you know, as of right now in that report, in the grand jury report, there were, I think, 9 victims. They're saying there's as many as 20 to 25 now that would have been involved in this. So this is obviously a serious, serious issue. And I don't know, man. This is not good for that school at all. I mean, looking at it from a pure sports perspective, they're dead football-wise. Who the hell's going to want to go there anytime soon? They're not going to get
anywhere. I'm sorry, who?
Yeah.
Who's going to want to go there as a student?
Yeah, who's going to send their kids
football
there?
Program.
Who's going to send their kids
who
there?
Wants to go? Exactly. It's a disaster. Camelot has crumbled. And I'll tell you something. And when we get to – after the new year, we start doing some of our college basketball shows, and my brother comes back. And my brother is a Penn State football fan, and he's just disgusted by this as well. But there were rallies, and this is where, like, the student just needs to get their heads out of their asses.
They're protesting tonight.
Yeah, they had rallies at Joe Pa's front yard, and guys, this has nothing to. Don't give me this shit. How could you fire him now? They're 8-1. What the fuck is wrong with you people?
No, and the people saying
seriously,
he should be able to retire with dignity and everything, and no, he lost that chance when he didn't. He could have been a hero in this whole situation when he found out back whenever, and he went to the police and got Sandusky arrested. He could have really been the hero of this whole situation. They would have said, this guy saved the day. Instead, he was a pussy and a coward, and he wanted to protect his boy and protect his school's legacy, and he didn't say anything. And how many more kids were affected? And I wanted to fucking puke last night when he came out and said, I'm praying for the victims. Fuck you, you're praying for the victims. Where the fuck were you when they needed you 5-6 years ago, when you could have saved the next 10 or 11 if you would have blew the whistle when you knew about this? How many more were affected because you didn't speak up?
If somebody had said something in 1996 or 97 when Sandusky was a coordinator, he's bringing these kids to bowl games and putting his hands on legs, and then that poor kid in 2002 in the shower, that never would have even happened.
Right.
It makes me – and look, I watch – you know, one of my favorite shows that I watch is Law & Order SVU, which – sometimes you need a pretty strong stomach to handle.
All right. There are students protesting right now. They're showing, and they have signs supporting Paterno. This is a fucking joke. That school is
what
a
is
fucking
wrong
disgrace.
With you people? Oh my god, this is just ridiculous. This whole university is fucked. Forget the football program; that's fucked already. But like, people are saying that Urban Meyer should be head coach. It should be the next head coach. I feel bad for Tom Bradley. Tom Bradley is the interim. He's going to take over starting Saturday when they play Nebraska. And I'm sorry. And you know what? That place is going to be a sellout. That'll be a sellout. I feel bad. You know what I feel bad most? The actual players.
Well, they had to fire Paterno before that game because that game's national on ESPN. And the last thing they needed was their whole – I'm sure there's still going to be fans calling for him protesting, but they didn't need to have him get a standing ovation on the field on national TV.
Yeah,
I think
that's
a big part of why they fired him right now.
Yeah. No, there's no time to wait anymore. It's over. It's over. And my ex-roommate – and I don't know. You've never been there. I've actually been to Penn State 6 times between 1990 – actually, I was there – during the wheelhouse of it, 1996 to 2002. And the fact that I was probably walking around those buildings when, oh God, I can't even think about it. Just makes my skin crawl.
Well, our good old friend Mark Clare went there too, and he would have been there around, I think he was like 99 to 2001. I think he was around when I was there in college. So
Yeah.
He would have been there during all this.
Oh, God. Could you imagine? And I could tell, and you could see Claire, and we know Claire pretty well. He probably was like, hey, what's going on? Wow, look at those kids. And I'm goofing. Mark's a nice kid, but he's a little cloudy. But, I mean, I was there, and yeah, Happy Valley is pretty much the whole place. It's so yeah. Who knows how deep this runs? You know, do the campus police, did they know? How do they not
know? It sounds like they knew. They were involved. Because they were the ones that listened to the mother talk to Sandusky on a taped conversation.
But they saw Sandusky going into these.
I know, that's the problem.
Facility, and they let him in.
Still there as of last week. And
yeah.
This is going to be kind of my final statement on this. For those people defending Paterno, and the people I know on Facebook and other places, put yourself in the situation of a parent of one of these children. And if you found out that somebody knew that could have stopped it, and then your child was abused because they didn't, I think you'd be thinking a little bit differently, honestly. Yep. I don't see how anyone can defend him. McQueary, who I think he should probably get fired and locked up as well, even though I can kind of, I don't want to say sympathize, but I can kind of see his point where maybe he was afraid because, like I said, the culture of that whole cult-like town, afraid that he wouldn't be believed or, you know, that he'd be run out of there. I can see that fear maybe a little bit. And at least he, you know, he brought people into it. And Paterno, I just don't buy it that people are saying, oh, well, he went to a supervisor. Paterno has no supervisor. Nominally, maybe, not whatever the fucking word is. Nominally, what's the word?
Nominally?
Yeah, nominally, I guess. In name only. The AD would be his boss, but not...
Yeah.
You know, he's the boss there. He's the guy who needs to take charge and take care of these things. And I think if Sandusky wasn't his buddy, I think maybe they would have taken this thing more seriously. But they tried to brush it under the rug, and more kids were tormented and abused by this sick monster. And I'm honestly surprised Sandusky hasn't offed himself yet, to be honest with you. This guy's life is clearly over anyway. I mean, how do you bounce back from this? Even if they would have found out that all this shit wasn't true by some miracle, he's done. You know, I don't know. I'm surprised he's going to allow himself to have to go through this right now. But the worst I could say is I just hope he gets destroyed in prison. I hope they don't give him the death penalty or anything, because I want him to just be abused and beaten on in prison, which is what he deserves. And I think Paterno... And I put this on Facebook. I think they should have him take a Sandusky shower in the showers there, and then we'll see how quickly he calls the fucking cops when he has got to experience it.
Oh,
so
geez.
He's another one that I think send his 84-year-old ass to jail and let McQueary go there with him too. So I think the AD and I think the president, anyone who was involved and had knowledge of this, I think deserves jail time, with obviously Sandusky getting life.
Well, and I mean, and that's pretty much everybody. It's the whole university, man. I mean, who's going to go there? Forget football. Football is irrelevant here. Who's going to go to the school? It's a great university. It's one of the best state schools in the country. Who's going to go there?
No, it's going to take a long time for them to bounce back from this.
And no one of any consequence. I mean, next to the head coaching job at Notre Dame, Joe Paterno's successor probably was the most prized position in all of college sports. I think next to that would be whenever Mike Krzyzewski retires at Duke. Who in God's name would sacrifice themselves to want that job right now? Nobody. Somebody said Urban Meyer should get it.
Yeah,
what the hell would he want that job for?
No, he could do a lot better than that, that's for sure right now.
Well, he's probably going to wait for Brian Kelly to get fired and take the Notre Dame job, which I don't know if that'll happen. But, I mean, it's just a tragedy. It's sad because...
Oh, I mean, Paterno's legacy is now this for him.
Yeah,
so.
No one cares about the wins, the two national championships, the all-time wins. His all-time win total is about as tainted as Barry Bonds' 700.
Yeah. And just like all the Giants fans that rallied around Bonds, the Penn State fans are rallying around Paterno. But there's a major difference. Bonds only hurt himself.
Yeah.
Paterno allowed children to be hurt. And that's the difference. Bonds only damaged his own body.
You know, all of these 19-year-old nitwits should read the and for those that want to read it, we're warning you. If you want to read it, every ESPN story on the website has the PDF attached to it. Problem is, you have to look at Sandusky's face, and that may make you want to squirm anyway.
And page 15 and the last couple pages are the most disturbing. Just be ready for a very disturbing read. And I feel like anytime anyone's been arguing with me on this, I just said, read that and then get back to me. I don't know how you can read that and then come away with anything other than all these guys should be fucking sent to the clink.
Yeah, really. I mean, we're not just talking about, you know, hands and hands on thighs and, you know, wrestling bare chested and stuff like that. I mean, it's wrong, but I mean, that stuff you can look past. It's the shower stuff that just, it just makes me sick. You almost want to take a shower and then you think about it. You don't want to take one.
The way he clearly set this all up, he has this charity and then he tests these boys to see how far they go. You know, oh my God. It was just a fucking pathological, methodical way about him. That was just really fucked up. The whole thing is just fucked up.
It is.
I don't know. I think we should move on. Cause I'm kind of done with it now. And, like I said, I honestly hope they all get locked up. I think they all deserve it. I think it's a fate they deserve for turning a blind eye to this. I mean, outside of murdering children, this is pretty much as low as you can go. Did you hear the whole thing about WFAN today with Mike Francesa? He's been
talking about it all week.
Yeah, he's been on top of this.
Yeah, well, Kim Jones went to Penn State.
Yeah, she's been locked in with all the news and everything too. But I guess there was a guy who called in today. I listened to the call. They had it on YouTube. And this guy was telling a story about how he was abused all throughout the growing up in the 60s and 70s, and everyone knew. But the way the laws were back then is until you were 18, you couldn't prosecute or bring charges. People just allowed it to happen, basically. And finally, when he was 14, he killed his father. And this guy's like admitting all this on the air. And Francesa's basically hung up on him. And he's like, look, I can't have you telling the story without proof. And he's like, send me proof that this is all true and I'll bring you back on for an interview. So it's pretty crazy. This guy called up and like admitted to killing his father on the air. And I think Francesa did the right thing. Obviously, you can't let this guy go and tell the story. And Francesa looks like an idiot if it turns out to be false. So
I know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's not going to allow himself to get burnt. But it's crazy. I mean, who would ever thought? And like you said, the NBA is pretty lucky because this is totally overshadowing them right now. And sadly, I saw this posted too, and I fully agree with it. This should have been a time that we should be honoring Joe Frazier, that guy, a guy who was a classy guy and lived a great life, and his death was totally overshadowed by all this garbage.
Yeah, I actually wanted to mention that tonight. I'm glad you said that too. For those that don't know, obviously you all know who Joe Frazier is. Joe Frazier died on Tuesday after a short battle with liver cancer. He died in hospice. Here's a guy who handed the greatest fighter of all time, Muhammad Ali, his first loss in maybe the greatest single event in the history of Madison Square Garden. They call it the fight of the century, and it lived up. It went 15 rounds. He was a man's man when it came to the boxing business, and he passed away. And instead of talking about that, we got to talk about guys with 10-year-olds in showers. It's just disgusting. It's unfortunate. And, you know, we wanted to talk about real college football. We just had number one play number two for the first time in like 5 years on Saturday. Yeah. LSU beat Alabama Saturday night, 9-6 in overtime in a great game. Defensive struggle. I never saw two defenses. Mm-hmm. And I was in and out on NyQuil, so I don't remember the whole game. But I never saw two defenses hit the shit out of offensive guys, particularly Alabama. I can't believe LSU must have had to take a long sauna, alone. After that, because Alabama guys just knocked the crap out of those guys, but you miss four field goals, you lose, period. So LSU is the undisputed number one, and now Oklahoma State has slid into the two spot in the BCS. I want to talk about a little college football on purpose so we can talk about the actual sport instead of giving more press to all these fucking scumbags. So I'm sure if anything new comes up next week, we'll let you know. But Joe Pa's gone, and good riddance, you stupid, selfish prick. And I hate this, and I was meant to say this before, but we got on another topic. My ex-roommate, one of my dear friends when I was in college and throughout most of the 90s into the early 2000s, again, I used to go with him to the games because his dad went to Penn State. And this guy is the biggest Penn State fan I've ever met in my life. I don't talk to him anymore, but I'm curious to see what he's thinking right now because he bled. I mean, he has a lot of favorite teams. He's a Philly. He liked all of Philly because he's a Pennsylvania kid. I can't even fathom what he's thinking right now. You know, I can't even fathom it. But and Dr. G, our good friend, asked me tonight. He goes, "If this happened in Notre Dame, what would you do?" I said, "I wouldn't root for them anymore. I probably would put a pile of all my stuff, put it in the parking lot, and set it all on fire."
Our buddy Brian Samek, and I can vouch for him. This is a kid who, just from being his friend on Facebook over the last few months, obviously is always posting about Penn State and critiquing and watching the games. And alumni there and obviously a huge fan. And now even he, you know, is turned his back on this program. So there's going to be a lot of that, and there's going to be a lot of this. This isn't going away. And apparently, I didn't really see this whole thing, but apparently our good old friend from WCW, Mark Madden, broke this story like back in March or something, but no one paid attention to it. There's something out there about that. He wrote a story about this, and apparently it flew under the radar somehow. So I don't know. I'm glad they did what they did tonight. I think Paterno had to go. There's no point in keeping him around till the end of the year and letting him retire on his own terms. Fuck that. I'm glad they got rid of him. I'm curious when he finally does speak, and I'm sure he's going to want to, because he said all along he wants to speak. So we'll see how that goes. But we're running a little long here, so let's quickly move on past that stuff and move on to.
So we won't get into the NBA stuff because that's just as depressing. Except
well, they're
on
still
much
meeting right now.
Scale.
Right?
Yeah, much more. And I'm done with Derek Fisher. Come on, Fish, stop being such a drone to that dope Billy Hunter. I just can't stand watching the two of them talk. They're both makes me sick. But you know what? That's a much more superficial topic than what we just discussed. We'll get more into the NBA stuff next week. But anyway, it is our final segment of the night, and you know what that means. Now, you were starting to widen the gap on me, my friend. Mm-hmm. I got to start making some catch up. I believe you're 5 ahead of me now. I think it's 91 to 86.
I have 83, and you have 78.
Okay, so you're 5 behind me. Now, I'm not one of those ones who's going to start picking stupid games just to catch up. I'm going to keep picking the way I want to pick, and maybe I'll catch up, maybe I won't. That's how I've always been. I'm not going to pick stupid games just for the sake of. I'm not like that. We actually have no buys this week. Everybody's playing. We have more buys next week.
All right, so we're going to have to hustle through this then.
Yeah, we got a lot of them. All right, we actually begin the Thursday night games this week. The Thursday night games start, so tomorrow night or tonight, depending on when you listen, the first game on NFL Network from Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, where the Chargers, and give me a little props. This isn't the one I'm gonna pump my chest about, but give me a little credit.
Yeah, they
I was
hung.
Close.
They definitely did a lot better than I thought they were going to.
They hung. The Chargers hung around.
Hey,
but
you know what? They played with some fucking passion for once. That the team usually seems like they're playing like robots out there. So for once, they played with some heart and busted their ass to try and win that game, and it shows.
Yeah, so they lost a tough one to the Packers, who stayed undefeated. Chargers host the Oakland Raiders on Thursday night. And
how's that Carson Palmer trade looking now? I'm sure they're really glad they mortgaged the future for this fucking stiff. Losing to Denver at home is just atrocious, and they're going to go into San Diego and get smacked around. I think so.
I agree with you. I like the Chargers too. I think maybe they, even in losing, I think the Chargers found a little life that their heart's beating, and they're in a 3-way tie for first. And I think they're going to take advantage. So I agree with you. I like the Chargers at home as well. All right, let's go to the Sunday games. We've got, 1 o'clocks. Oh, a lot of 1 o'clocks.
Ten.
Wow. Five.
10 1 o'clock games.
10 1 o'clocks. Three late game. 3 4 o'clocks. The one NBC and then the Monday night game. All right, we begin.
A lot
begin
of good
at,
games this week.
Yeah, there was a lot of tough games. And games involving two good teams and a lot of games involving two crappy teams, too. We'll begin at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, where the Eagles, who got stunned on Monday night, at home by the Bears. I still think this Eagle team is not very good. I know they
no, that, that might have been their nail. They have their Super Bowl basically at this point, or season on the brink next week on Monday night against the Giants. Sunday night against the Giants. That is going to be their make or break game. For right now, though, God, I'll let you set the game up.
Yeah, well, again, this is an easy one. The Eagles host the Arizona Cardinals, who did win an exciting game last week, but they did play the Rams, and it did have to go to overtime. This is a game I think the Eagles win. They're at home.
No Cobb.
I can't see them. No Cobb. I don't even know who this Red Skelton guy is or what the hell his name is. walking around doing
it. Way to date yourself a little.
I had to do it. Come on. There's no other skeletons I know, for Christ's sakes. But,
you shouldn't
anyway,
know any. That's the point.
I know. All right. So, anyway, the Eagles win this one easy at home.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we go to Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, where the Carolina Panthers host the Tennessee Titans. Interesting game here. Mm. I'm going to take the Panthers at home. I like Cam. I'm on the Cam bandwagon.
They're actually favored.
Tennessee has struggled.
They can't score.
Yeah, they can't score. The defense is looking a little tired. But this has been a very inconsistent year in the NFL, and there have been people on a lot of talk shows talking about how just picking games has been practically impossible. Mm-hmm. This is a game where you know Tennessee could show up and win. Who the hell knows? But I'm going to take Carolina. I like Cam. When that kid's got confidence and when he wants to throw the ball and the Panthers seem to be wanting to play for him, Their offense looks pretty good. So I think they'll score some points. I think they'll win this game. I take the Panthers.
Yeah, after losing Kenny Britt and Chris Johnson's done nothing, I mean, their Tennessee offense is just abysmal. And I like Carolina here as well. I think they come back off their bye refreshed. I think they pick up a win. And I think they're going to finish the season kind of strong. I mean, I don't think they're going to sniff a playoff spot, obviously. But they, right. I think they'll finish with some pride.
All right, we move on to Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, where the Buccaneers host the Houston Texans. And this is a, you know, I always talk about that, you know, I need to pick the Bucs. I think they're going to do well. I don't like them in this game at all. Houston is finally looking like, they're looking at the rest of the teams in the division and going, all right, this is our chance to really take control of this division. And I mean, although this could be a trap game, you know, Tampa looked tough last week in losing on the road at New Orleans, but, I'm going to go with conventional wisdom. I think Houston will win this game on the road. I think their offense is looking really good. They got a nice setup running the football. I know Andre Johnson hasn't been playing, but it seems like they're scoring points anyway. Defense has actually looked a little much tougher, particularly in the secondary. I'm going to take the Texans on the road.
All right, I'm actually going with your Bucs here.
Okay.
I think it is a trap game for Houston. I think they can waltz that division when they're looking at it right now, and I can see this being a little bit of a letdown on the road. As opposed to where Tampa really, really needs this win right now if they're going to have any chance at the playoffs. I think they know it. I think it's a winnable game for them. I think Houston's good, but I can just see them having a letdown. Matt Schaub has not played well at all, actually. That's all been Arian Foster and Ben Tate in the running game carrying that team. So this is a toss-up to me, but I like Tampa at home. I think they steal this one.
Okay. So we split on that one. We stay in the Sunshine State. And guess who got win numero uno last week?
Shocking win.
Unbelievable. Good job, Tony. The Miami Dolphins finally get a win last week, and it was dominating. 31-3.
Yeah, that was
no
joke.
Chiefs.
Yeah, in Kansas City.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going for two straight. I think the Dolphins, who host the Washington Redskins, who are just absolutely terrible, can't score. Defense is tired. This is a good game for Miami. I think the crowd down there will be pumped up. I think
you're not afraid of John Beck coming home.
yeah, right. Nah, I'm you know, always been, obviously I'm a huge Tony fan, sunglasses or not. I like the Dolphins at home to win their second straight.
I agree. Miami's just got more talent and they're going to be feeling good coming off that win. And I said last week, I didn't think they were tanking. I don't think any team tanks. So, I thought they'd break through at some point. I didn't think it'd be in Kansas City, and now I got to reevaluate how I feel about Kansas City, but, Miami at home should win this one here. Washington is atrocious.
All right, so we both take the Dolphins. We move on to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where the Colts host the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I'm going to call it out on the line here. I think this is where the Colts get their first win.
Oh,
I think
you stole my upset pick.
I think the Colts get their first win. I think they beat the Jags. Blaine Gabbert, he's not a bad quarterback. He's a kid. But there's just no, other than your boy there, MJD there. There's just no talent on this offense whatsoever.
No, they're awful. Indy, I think, is, they seem like they finally need to break through at some point. You know, they've come close a couple times. And Curtis Painter's been okay. And actually, is he even starting? Is Orlovsky starting? I'm not even sure if he's starting that game.
Yeah, I'll have to double check.
Orlovsky finished the last week. I know that.
Yeah.
But I don't. If this was in Jacksonville, I'd be rethinking it. But I like Indy at home here. Finally get a win. And this may be their last chance for a while, so they need to get this one.
Yeah, I'm double-checking now. I think Orlovsky might start that game next week. Orlovsky, a UConn alum, incidentally.
Well, I read something today he was part of the last winless team as well. Him and Ernie Sims were both on the Detroit team that didn't win a game, and now they're both on this Colts team as well.
I know. Poor guy. All right, so we both take the Colts to get their first win. Next up, we go back to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, where the Chiefs try and lick their wounds as they take on the Denver Broncos. Tell me this isn't a game that you really are staring at going, what the hell do I do with this?
I'm going to give the Chiefs one last chance, and I'm going to hold off on Denver one last week. I'm not really ready to get on their bandwagon yet. Oakland is a train wreck. Kansas City is a better team than they are. I don't know what the fuck happened last week. Obviously, I'm kind of off the Kansas City may win the division bandwagon until they can right the ship right now. But they're still in a tie for first. And Denver, what are they? Game out. If they win this, they might. And if they win this, and Oakland wins, I think Denver's in first, which is amazing.
Yeah, and I called it too. Yeah, I called that. Yeah, but I thought I was.
No, there's a big difference. You said they were going to be good. There's a difference between them being in first place in this garbage division at 4-4, whatever the fuck they are, 4-6. And you thought they were actually going to be a good team. So I'm not giving you credit for that one.
All right, that's fine. I agree. It's like the West last year too, the NFC West. All right, so I'm taking the Chiefs at home as well. I'll give them a chance to lick their wounds and get this one back. Tebow played well, but you know people still aren't totally sold on him. We'll see if the Chief defense can respond against him. So we both like Kansas City at home. We go to Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, where the Cowboys, who came off a nice win last week, they didn't look great, but they look good enough. DeMarco Murray seems to be rushed for 139 yards, I think.
Yeah.
Looked pretty good in a win over the Seahawks, although Dez Bryant still pisses me off. How a guy who's 6'4 and like 230 can get stripped of the ball by a 5'8 Mighty Mite in that little tiny Seahawks secondary. The kid still pisses me off sometimes. But the defense looked great again. Jason Witten's still one of the top three tight ends in the league. They host the Buffalo Bills, who you guys exposed a lot. And we'll talk more about your team in a little bit. But I like the Cowboys at home. I think Buffalo got exposed last week. I think you guys did a nice job of cutting that nut open.
Yeah, I think the blueprint is out now. Dallas, they've been winning some tight games, but they've been winning. And I've been on them all year. And I think Romo stays hot. And I think they take this one at home.
Well,
I think the Buffalo bloom is coming off the rose.
This is a big three-game stretch for the Cowboys because they have Buffalo and then at Washington and then the Thanksgiving game against Miami before their next game, which is at – and then at Arizona.
Yeah, and then they could easily – so what are they right now, 4-4 or 5-4?
They get 4-4. They could easily be 8-4 when they play the Giants on Monday night, December 11th.
Yeah. So they should be 8-4 with the teams they have. There's no reason they can't be. So.
No, this is a stretch. They've got Buffalo, Washington, Miami, and Arizona.
Yeah, no reason they should not win all four of those games.
No, they should be. So I'm taking the Cowboys at home, as are you. Okay. Next, we go to the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. Huge game. Probably the game of the – well, one of the two games of the week.
Yeah, there's two big games this week, and that's one of them.
Yeah, this is one of them. The Atlanta Falcons hosting the New Orleans Saints. Pretty much first place in the NFC South on the line. We picked them to go to the Super Bowl. I got to take the Falcons. I think they win this game. Drew Brees has not been – statistically, he looks good, but he hasn't looked as good as people think he has. He's thrown more picks.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line's been a little shaky, and I think Matt Ryan, who's kind of sleptwalked through these last 4 weeks of the season, I think he wakes up at home. I think the crowd gets excited. I'm taking the Falcons at home.
Yeah, me too. They need to win this game. New Orleans has not been very good on the road, actually. They've been much better at home, and I like Atlanta here. Michael Turner's been playing very well. Julio Jones had a big game last week. I think Atlanta needs this win. I think they're going to play very hungry in this game, and this is a huge game to determine this division because if New Orleans wins this, they pretty much lock things up, I think. So
yeah,
Atlanta, are they tied right now? What's the deal with them?
I think the Saints are up by a half game.
Okay.
I don't think the Saints have had their bye yet. So.
Okay, and the Saints beat them the first time, right?
Yeah, the Saints have their bye next week. So they have a half-game lead on the Falcons right now.
And they beat them once already, right?
And they beat them once in the Dome. Okay. So. All
right. So they need to – Atlanta really needs to win this game. I think they get it done.
Okay. We have two really great games on the docket this week, and then we got this game.
Ugh.
We go to Cleveland Browns Stadium, where the Browns host the St. Louis Rams. You know what? I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm going to take the Rams on the road.
Yeah, me too, buddy.
I'm done with Cleveland. I love their uniforms. I love the orange pants, but they're terrible.
They're bad. Nicole McCoy has not been good.
No.
The Rams, they're not that bad. They have the talent there. I don't know. They just got off to a tough. They had a tough early part of their schedule.
They got a lot. And they got a lot of injuries too.
Yeah, they were riddled with injuries, and now Mark Clayton's back. Bradford's back. So I think they go into Cleveland. I think they can win that game. They had a hiccup. Arizona basically had a freak win, blocking a field goal and then getting a punt return to win that game at home. I like St. Louis here to pick up the win in Cleveland.
Okay. The final 1 o'clock game takes us to Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, where the Bengals, who have won 5 in a row for the first time since they went to the Super Bowl in 1988 with Boomer and Icky Woods, the Icky Shuffle, taking on the Steelers, who got stunned on Sunday night. And
you
I won't
brag
say
now.
Play.
Or are you gonna wait? You gonna wait?
No, I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait till it's actually the next game on the list.
All right.
I'll wait. But I'm actually, you know what? I like Andy Dalton. He's had a great year so far. But this is one of those blood in the waters kind of thing, like the wounded animal. I'm taking the Steelers. I think it's a game they have to win if they're going to hang around.
Yeah, this is a definite big boy game, and I don't think Cincinnati's there yet. I think they have a lot of promise. I think they're going to be good. They have a young stud quarterback and a young stud wide receiver in AC Green. Or AJ Green. I can't call him AC Green.
AJ Green. AJ Green. Cedric Benson. Yeah, bring back the Jerry Curl.
And the virginity. But Cedric Benson, very good running back. They have a great defense. Just a very solid. They really transformed that team from a team of misfits to a very solid team overnight. It reminds me a lot of what the Trailblazers did. Just very quickly, silently and quietly overhauled everything. So, I like their future. I don't like them in this game, even though they're in Cincinnati. I just think they're a little over their heads. They've had a soft schedule. And as a Jets fan, I really need one of these two teams to bottom out quickly, and I think Cincy has a better chance to do that because there's a very real chance the AFC North could get three teams in the playoffs, which would not be good. So I like Pittsburgh here. I mean, Cincy, 6-2, and they're actually the number one seed in the AFC right now, but they haven't played Baltimore or Pitt yet at all. So they still have four of their games are against those two teams. So
Yeah. No, I'm taking the Steelers on the road. They need this win after what happened on Sunday night. So we're both taking the Steelers. Mm-hmm. We move to CenturyLink Field in Seattle, where the Seahawks take on the Baltimore Ravens. And now it is time for your boy. All right, I've had to see you go on the Facebook page and thump your chest about the Mavericks and the this and Garrard getting released and all this chest thumping you're doing. Well, it's time for me to do it. I said in the preseason, and you thought I was crazy, that the Ravens would sweep the Steelers, and they did. So, and that's why they're going to win the division. That's why I think they're going to be the number one seed in the East. As bad as in the AFC, their offense has been a little shaky, but Flacco threw for 300 yards. He looked good last week. They're on cloud nine. They're going to go into Seattle, and they're going to beat the Seahawks.
I agree. I so wanted to think this as a trap game. Baltimore coming off that hard-fought win, going out west into a tough, tough place to play. But I can't take Charlie Whitehurst or Tavares Jackson or whoever the fuck is starting the game against the Baltimore defense. But Baltimore, as a warning, they are known for those kind of letdowns in those kind of games. So I wouldn't be completely shocked, but I can't see it happening.
Okay. All right. It's time for you now to thump your chest. We move now to Candlestick Park in San Francisco, where the Niners, the 49ers, host the New York football Giants. And you said it, my friend. You did.
I thought they had a good chance. I don't like New England's defense. I don't like the way they've been playing. Their offense has been trending downwards very steeply. And I was scared picking the Pats to lose two in a row, especially with the Jets coming up. I just thought the Giants were playing well. Eli tends to play well in those big games. He tends to suck in those shitty games where they don't matter, but he plays huge in those games. And I just had a feeling they were going to go in there. And then I almost changed my pick at the last minute when I found out Knicks and Bradshaw were both out. But I was like, no, I'm going to stick with it. And Eli tried to hand the game back to them. They were up 10-0, driving for the dagger, 17-0, and he threw that pick.
Yep.
Pats, of course, tied it and then eventually took the lead. And then Eli drove him down the field, threw the touchdown to Jake Ballard, and New England couldn't answer the call. So they stunned the Pats in Foxborough for a huge win. I don't see it happening 2 weeks in a row, though. I don't think they can go out west and beat the Niners. So we're playing very strong. I'm not saying I completely believe in the Niners at this point, but I think they squeak out a tough win here. I can see this being a very low-scoring game.
Really? I vehemently disagree with you.
Okay.
I don't like any of the teams the Niners have played so far. They played a lot of cupcakes. They're one legit win. They did beat Philly in Philly. They did beat Detroit. But right now the Giants are on cloud nine. And you're telling me that if they could beat Tom Brady in Foxborough, they could beat Alex Smith.
This has Eli let down, pop the bubble game written all over it.
I don't see it right now.
Hey, they beat the Patriots and Tom Brady. It was the Pats D that gave up that last drive and that touchdown. The Niners D is legitimate. They have hurt people. They have put people on the sidelines. They are no joke. And the Giants are going in there banged up as it is. And this isn't the Pats D that they can shred up and down the field on. And they only had 3 points in the half in that game. How do you think they're going to score on San Fran D in San Fran?
Well, I also don't think that, I mean, you know, the Giants defense isn't chopped liver. And since when is Alex Smith Tom Brady anyway?
Well, what did I just say? I don't know what kind of points they're going to score. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be very low scoring. I can see it being like a 12-9 kind of game or whatever, 12-10 kind of game.
Yeah, I it could be low scoring as well, but You know, Eli right now has not been making those kind of stupid three picks.
He just made one. He just made one last week. He threw a pick in the to almost cost him the game.
Yeah, well, he also redeemed himself by winning, driving down the field in enemy territory.
He got that pass interference call that helped him. I don't know. Look, I'm just saying he did it against...
Don't dunk your own chest thump, okay?
You know, the Patriots statistically... Well, this is why I picked them, because the Patriots statistically have the worst defense in NFL history right now. And that's a lot different than going against the number one ranked defense in the 49ers at San Fran. I'm just saying, it's going to be tough to go back across the coast and take on a team that's playing with a lot of confidence right now, that's been destroying quarterbacks and running backs to the point they're basically clubber-langing these other teams right now.
Excellent. Nothing hurts. Nothing's better than a good Rocky analogy. You know that here on the Place to Be.
So. I mean, they're putting guys on the fucking shelf. So,
okay. All right, I'm good. You know, we got a nice headbutt here. All right, you like the Niners at home. I like the Giants' confidence right now. They're in first place, and I think
the Niners need another statement game too. I think they view this as a game that they can prove that they're legitimate. I mean, fuck, they already get the division. They have like a 99.9% chance already of making the playoffs anyway. So I think they're trying to lock shit up anyway. So I think they're looking at this as a statement game, a possible future playoff game, and I think they're going to try and prove that they are legitimate. I don't think Harbaugh is going to let them have a down game at all. But Eli, to me, tends to play down in some of these games after coming off a big win like that.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, the one game that he did do that this year was a game against the Seahawks, and a lot of those picks were tips. So we'll see. All right.
Well, I'm not saying he's going to throw 10 picks. I just don't see them moving up and down the field that easily on this 9 or D.
All right. Okay. We'll see. Well, it's going to be. I'm glad we have one game that we really butted heads on. So we move on now to Soldier Field in Chicago, where the Bears, who won that huge game Monday night over the Eagles, host the Lions, who are coming off a bye. I can't see the Lions winning this game on the road.
No,
I'm taking the Bears.
Yep.
I think their defense is hitting hard. They're playing with some big confidence right now. That division suddenly, well, not that division because you still got the Packers.
Yeah, the wild card is up.
The wild card is still wide open in the NFC. And I think, you know, as much as Jay Cutler sometimes is a pain in the ass, when he wants to actually play well, he seems to step up.
Well, when he's getting the time to throw, he's
yeah. And the Lions are in this weird, uncharted territory now where they don't know whether they're that good or maybe they are good or I don't know. I don't like the Bears in this. I don't like the Lions in this game at all. I'll take Chicago.
No, Chicago coming off that win in Philly was humongous. So I think they carry that momentum over.
Okay. All right, let's go to the NBC game, the Sunday night game. And here we are, my friend. Round two. And I think you are prime for this one.
Oh, God, I'm so scared. I'm alternating between being excited and scared because this can go one of two ways. This game either has changing of the guard written on it, where they can bury the Pats, hand them their unprecedented third straight loss, and take control of that division. And who would have thought 4 weeks ago that the Jets would be in control of the destiny if they win this game?
Right.
I could also see it being a typical Jets letdown game where they come out and end up blowing this game and the Pats get their mojo back. I can see it going both ways. The Jets defense, they need to do what they did to Buffalo last week, do their best to take away and press those receivers. They need to put Revis on Welker, press him, and beat the shit out of him at the line. They need to put Cromartie on Gronkowski, like I said the last time, and then let the rest of the defense do the job over the middle. And I'm not worried about Ocho Stinko, who your boy predicted was going to be garbage at the beginning of the year, and he is ranked, I saw something like based on target percentage of catches on targets, he's like 148th out of 151 receivers or something like that. He is just brutal. And Albert Haynesworth, the other big signing.
Your boy predicted to the Liverpool lover boy there that fat bastard wasn't even going to make the end of the season. And it's kind of sad that the worst-ranked defense in the NFL cut him.
And they cut Lee Bodden as well. So there's a lot of – I'm telling you, I've never seen it around here where Belichick's been questioned this much. They are ripping him for his drafting and blowing all these drafts. And now they pretty much have no depth in their defense, a train wreck. And this last year – they drafted two running backs and a cornerback who was chronically injured in college, is on the injured reserve right now, and two running backs who never even sniffed the field. So let me ask you this quickly, and I actually asked a few people at work this question, and my brother-in-law as well. Do you think the Patriots wasted Brady's prime years over these last few years with their stupid draft philosophy, trading down, loading up on these low-level guys instead of trying to get elite weapons? And I don't count Randy Moss because he fell in their lap. So Oakland basically gift-wrapped them. It's not like they went out and paid through the nose for a big-time elite weapon. You're saying they couldn't use a Julio Jones right now? Or one of these other major weapons that have gone in the previous years in the draft? Or a pass rusher?
If Julio Jones was on the Patriots, they'd be undefeated right now. And they would be the easy lock to win the whole
thing.
Even
Torrey Smith, the kid from Baltimore? somebody couldn't use him, or Mike Wallace last year. I mean, there's so many guys that they've missed on, and they keep just trading down. And Belichick, great coach, Hall of Fame coach, maybe not that great of a GM.
No. No. They you know, that 07, ever since the 07 team, the Patriots seem to have sold off all of their gut offensive weapons. What, you're not going to win a Super Bowl. I'm sorry. And you know what? EEI and Rotel and all these guys, you're not going to win a Super Bowl with Danny Woodhead and Wes Welker as your main offensive weapons. I'm sorry.
I think we're being proved this year why the Jets let Woodhead go. I mean, it looked bad last year, but now you look at it, and Joe McKnight's been such a big part of the Jets team, and he's the reason they let Leon Washington and Danny Woodhead go. And
this is your game to win. You need to take this.
Oh, they have to. I mean, Rex is even saying they need to have this game. And if you lose this game, you're in trouble now, because the division is pretty much gone because you've lost two to the Pats. And the wild card could be in trouble, too, with the way the Bengals have been playing and these other three AFC North teams. So you win this, you put the Pats in that position now, where they already have two division losses, one to the Bills, one to the Jets. And, you know, the Jets would be 3-1 in the division. And looking up with another game still with Miami, and then they go into Denver next week. So they got a couple games they could win coming up. So they need this win. I'm going to pick them, obviously, but I am very scared. The last thing I need right now is a Patriots win. But I think the Jets can do it. I hope they attack with the passing game. I hope they don't just try and run and run and run and over like they did, and have all those three and outs like they did in Foxborough. And if you look at the Pats, They have a very good chance where they could have a much worse record, because they probably should have lost that Jets game, and they definitely should have lost the Cowboy game. Of course, they lost the Steelers, and now this past week as well, so to the Giants. So they're a team that's obviously limping into this game, and the Jets have to smell blood and see this as a chance to really knock the Patriots back a notch in this division and finally become the team in that division.
Yeah, I think so, too. This is a game that you guys need to win, the Jets. If this game was in Foxborough, I don't know if you'd want to face the wounded animal, but they got to limp into your building. Mm-hmm. And I read an article in the Daily News today telling Jet fans, get off your asses Sunday night and make that place loud.
No,
use the home field to your advantage for once. Get that Fireman Ed guy and those other obnoxious guys in the first three rows. Bang that shit and get them all pumped up.
They really need to hit Brady quick. Early, too. They need to get him on his ass early, because that's when he gets rattled and gets fucked up and starts throwing all over the place. They need to hit these guys and play physical. The Pats do not like to be hit, the receivers or the quarterback.
Yeah. One more game, obviously the Monday night. And we took a lot of time with the Jet game because this game is an easy pick.
Yeah.
Monday night at Lambeau Field, the Packers are going to blow out the Vikings, and that's pretty much the end of that. So Packers will stay undefeated for another week. So. By the way, that's my lock. My lock game is the Packers over the Vikings, and my upset pick is the Colts winning their
first game. I'll take Baltimore as my lock, and I'm taking the Colts as well as the for the upset.
Okay. All right. There's your Week 10 picks. Hope you enjoyed them, and that wraps up the rundown. There is your cornucopia fun and games headline show. We hope you enjoyed it. I feel we had a lot of analysis. We're very cerebral in episode 80.
Yes. Talks about
the character of John Cena, the pathos of the Rock's promos.
Yeah, I think we had a lot of good stuff. We went pretty long, so we'll wrap up. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show. It was a lot of fun to do. We had a lot of, like you said, a lot of interesting and intelligent discussion, I thought, in this one. Not to pat ourselves on the back.
We hope you enjoy it. Comment on the Facebook page, of course.
Thank you for coming out and force for the asshole week. That was some good stuff.
Yes. But we also want you to come out and force for our next podcast, episode 81, which will be this weekend. V squared SummerSlam 1994. We finally get off I-95 and go west a little bit.
Yep.
And sorry, no Art Donovan, audio this week. Sorry.
But I will have that thread up tomorrow for your thoughts on that show, which we'll be recording Friday night. Next week we'll be back with the headlines. We'll have our live reports from Raw and SmackDown, and then next week there'll be no Vintage Vault because we're gonna do the Survivor Series Listomania. But we will be back next week with the Vault the week after that, and then of course also as we mentioned earlier. We're going to start putting up a thread for some video game questions, because we're going to have a special podcast with Stevie Richards. He's going to come on and talk about the new Batman game. We're going to talk about the new WWE game and whatever other stuff is out there as well. So I've been talking to him, and he's interested in coming back on to talk with us. So that's
good.
Cool. So we're looking forward to that. And again, thank you for listening. Have a good rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next weekend with the new Vintage Vault.
Peace.